Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Lucky Bang by Deborah Kuntz, performed by Renee Rodman. Chapter 1. The bomb was small, crude, homemade, but lethal and familiar. The last time I had seen a device like this one had been a lifetime ago. Frankly, I thought I'd never see one again, and I certainly hadn't expected to find another ticking time bomb in the ladies' bathroom at Jimmy G's new family restaurant. Had I not spilled the entire contents of my purse while doing my business in the far stall, I never would have found it. But there I was, on all fours, chasing a runaway lipstick when I came nose to nose with a couple of sticks of old dynamite taped together and wired to a battery. An old wind-up clock ticked off the seconds. 3 minutes. And with the 4th of July celebrations this weekend, the city was bursting at the seams. Jimmy G had a full house. I glanced at my watch, marking the time. Forgetting the rest of my wayward personal items, I backed out of the tight space, grabbed my purse, no one leaves an Hermes Birkin anywhere, bomb or no bomb, and hurried out of the bathroom. Jimmy G was at his normal table in the bar by the piano, nursing his ubiquitous glass of Pinot Noir and bending the ear of some enraptured sweet young thing. He paused to wet his whistle when I stepped in next to him and bent down to whisper in his ear, "Jimmy, there's a bomb in the ladies' bathroom." His eyes widened, but that was the only reaction I could see.
"Can you take care of it?"
he spoke out of the corner of his mouth. "What do I look like? I don't know jack about bombs. For all I know, it could be rigged to blow when touched. Like the last one?" I checked the time. "We got 2.5 minutes. Lacking his normal grin, Jimmy stood to his full height of a wiry 5 feet 5 inches, his face grim, his manner all business, as he motioned to the waiters. They understood the silent order and began going from table to table, encouraging the patrons to leave quickly. Jimmy tinged on his glass with a spoon.
"Everyone, listen up. I apologize, and there's no time to explain, but please, we need you to exit the building and move away, across the parking lot out front, as far away as you can get. Quickly, we don't have much time."
A silence fell over the crowd for a moment, patrons casting shocked glances around the room. The soothing voice of Dean Martin, singing an oldie but goodie, and the dinging bells of the games in the kids' room filled the empty air. A moment suspended in time, captured by confusion, disbelief. Then the sound of chairs scraping back. Voices elevated now, hints of panic, but the crowd remained calm as they gathered the kids and moved to the exits. 2 minutes. I posted myself at the back of the main dining room and began ushering everyone toward safety. As a customer relations expert at the Babylon, Vegas Strip's most over-the-top casino resort, I have some experience with clearing rooms and herding crowds. One lady stopped to gather her purse and a backpack, presumably a child's. The purple dinosaur was a dead giveaway. I put a hand on her back. "Leave it." I kept my voice low, calm, but firm. For a moment I thought she would argue. Instead, she turned and hurried toward the door, rounding up children as she went. I heard faint sirens growing louder. 1:45. They wouldn't be in time. Sweat trickled down my sides as I forced myself to stay calm, to think clearly. A glance around the room confirmed that folks were doing as asked, except for one man at a table on the far side. Resolutely forking in spaghetti, he remained seated. Dodging the detritus of haste, overturned chairs, abandoned coats and bags, I hurried to his side. "Sir, you need to leave, now." His fork poised between plate and mouth, he glanced up at me with a smile.
"This is sauce, bolognese."
He He put two fingers to his lips and made that Italian kissing thing that is supposed to convey supreme satisfaction, but just comes off looking silly to us non-Italians.
Perfecto!
1 minute. Sir, I grabbed the back of his chair. You need to leave. He waved a hand as if shooing away a pesky gnat, then dove in for another bite.
These fire drills, they never mean anything. All smoke and no fire,
he announced, even though his mouth was full. This one is the real shebang. I tugged on his chair. Even with my considerable weight behind it, the thing wouldn't budge, so I grabbed his arm with both hands and pulled.
Come with me!
My voice carried the sharp prod of an order.
But my bolognese,
he whined as he reached for his napkin and started to stand. Now I had some leverage. Feeling time breathing down my neck, I pulled him up. With a shove, I pushed him toward the door. I'll buy you a new plateful when this is over. If there's a restaurant left. A glance over my shoulder, and confirmed that we were the last two out. With 40 seconds to spare, we rushed across the parking lot to join the crowd on the opposite side as the sirens grew louder. Through the rows of spindly trees in the parking lot, I saw the flashing lights of the first fire truck. 30 seconds. Too late.
Oh, my God!
A voice filled with panic.
Where's my daughter?
I whirled to face the throng. Who said that?
My daughter!
A woman wailed as she separated herself from the crowd and pointed toward the restaurant.
She's still inside. I have 4 children. 2 of them brought friends. I had them all, and now she's not here.
She clutched 3 children around her while 2 others huddled close. I dropped to 1 knee so I was eye to eye with the tow-headed little boy, his eyes wide with fear, his lips trembling. Do you know where she is?
It's my fault.
His chin trembled as he fought tears.
We were playing whack-a-mole. She lost her bear. I was supposed to watch her. She wouldn't leave without the bear.
Her name? Pushing myself to my feet, I turned and ran, shrugging out of Jimmy G's grasp as he reached to stop me.
Elise!
Her mother called after me.
Her name is Elise!
I ducked back inside the now empty restaurant. In 3 strides, I was at the entrance to the game room. My eyes searched the room, probing every corner. I missed her the first time. The small girl, a riot of long, sandy curls, a pressed pinafore, her eyes big and round, hunkered under a skee-ball machine. A small brown teddy bear with 1 eye clutched to her chest with both arms. Elise, come on, honey. I reached down, grabbing both her arms and lifting her to my hip. I'll take you to your mother, but we have to hurry. Turning, I ran. 10 seconds, I guessed. 9, less, I didn't take the time to look. 2 strides from the door. 1. A huge sound behind me. Instinctively, I ducked. The compression wave hit me. Staggering, I dropped to my knees, then to my side. Sheltering the girl's small body with mine, I curled around her, then covered my head. Sound and fury, a maelstrom of debris. Shrapnel whizzing through the air. Heat. Stinging pain. Then darkness. A hand on my shoulder. Movement. My eyes fluttered open. For a moment, I couldn't remember. Where was I? Flashes of memory zinged across my synapses. Jimmy G's. A bomb. A little girl. A jolt of adrenaline. Yes, a little girl. My eyes flew open as I took a deep gulp of air. Detective Romeo knelt in front of me, worry etching years into his boyish features. His mouth formed words, but I couldn't hear him. In fact, I heard only an intense, piercing screech. Shaking my head, I pushed at him, forcing myself to a seated position. Stars spun in my vision. I didn't care. I cast around frantically, searching. Finally, I saw her, my small young friend. Wrapped in a blanket, still holding her bear, she curled into the crook of a fireman's arms. Safe. Her mother followed close behind, herding the other children. Breathing easier, I swiped at my forehead. My hand came away wet. I felt my face scrunch into a frown as I stared at the red smear on my palm. Sounds, disjointed and far away, filtered past the shrill buzz in my head. The rush of pressurized spray from the fire hoses. Dripping water, boots clomping, hot embers sizzling. Snippets of reality, random pings on my real-world radar. Someone shaking me. Gentle pressure.
Lucky?
The word, muffled yet distinct, focused a few brain cells. For the first time, I looked around and took stock of my surroundings. Still on the floor, I was just inside the doorway to the restaurant. The picture windows across the front were gone. A few jagged shards, still clutched in the frame, hung like lethal icicles. But the rest of the plate glass was missing. Smoke hung in the air, a dark roiling cloud clinging to the ceiling, then drifting through the windows to be carried away on the breeze. Acrid and heavy, the air stung my eyes and seared my lungs. In full firefighting garb, firemen snaked their hoses through the gaping holes, then disappeared behind me.
Lucky!
Romeo's voice came in clearer now, the scream in my ears retreating.
Can you hear me?
Looking into his blue eyes, clouded with emotion, I nodded. My hearing might be normalizing, but my thoughts still bounced around the inside of my skull, compounding a blistering headache.
Everybody okay?
I pressed my palms to my temples, holding my head in a vice, pressure against the pain.
Yes, thanks to you.
The young detective grabbed both my shoulders, forcing my attention.
Who are you?
Letting my hands drop, the vice thing wasn't working, I tried to give him one of my patented snorts, but it came out as an anemic wheeze.
You know who I am. Yes, but do you?
He looked serious. Oh. I chewed on my lip as I exerted all the energy I could muster on marshaling my thoughts.
Lucky O'Toole.
A grin bloomed, cracking his stone face.
Where do you work?
The Babylon.
And what do you do there?
Solve problems. I took a deep breath. My head pounded, an ice pick of pain stabbing behind my right eye. I dabbed at my forehead again, then looked at my fingers. Fresh blood. And I put up with irritating detectives with the Metropolitan Police Department. Romeo sat back on his heels, his grin widening, which I didn't think possible. He motioned to one of the EMTs who came over and knelt in front of me. Cute, buff, with wavy dark hair, hazel eyes that bordered on gray, and dimples. He was the paramedic from Central Casting. With gloved hands, he gripped my head and probed my forehead with his thumbs.
Do you know me well enough to take such liberties? I asked.
Does this hurt?
He pressed with a thumb.
I yelped.
I'll take that as a yes.
He popped the latch on a black box that looked suspiciously like a tackle box.
If you plan on sewing me up with a fish hook and 8-pound test, we need to talk.
Once again, he flashed those darn dimples as he pulled out and opened a package of gauze. He used it to dab at my forehead.
You've taken a pretty good lick. Good thing you're tough.
The gauze turned red. He discarded it for a fresh wad. This time he added a dose of peroxide.
You'll need to get this checked out. There can be things going on inside your skull that we can't see. They can be fatal if not taken care of. And as pretty as you are, you'll want a plastics guy to stitch you up.
Are you flirting with me?
Romeo punched the paramedic on the shoulder.
I told you she was one ballsy broad.
I puckered my lips as I glared at Romeo, then turned and ran headlong into the medic's bemused expression. Afraid my brain might leak out my ear, I cautiously cocked my head at the young detective. "The kid has a death wish." That got a laugh out of both of them. Diffusing tension, I can do. With a couple of steri-strips in place, I felt good enough to try standing. Romeo extended a hand, which I gladly accepted. The EMT steadied me with one hand holding my elbow, the other firmly pressed into my lower back.
"How are you doing?"
he asked, as I tentatively stretched to my full 6 feet. For some reason, the fact that he still had me by a couple of inches made me feel infinitely better. "I'll rally."
"You don't know how lucky you really were."
Still holding my elbow, he eased me to the door.
"When those windows blew..."
Leveling those eyes, now dark and serious, like the sky before a storm, he captured my eyes.
"Have you ever seen a human flayed alive by flying glass?"
Sitting sideways on a gurney parked in some obscure hallway at University Medical Center, UMC to us locals, I half listened to the conversation in the curtained-off cubicle across the hall, straining to hear through the residual ringing in my ears. A bored voice with forced energy, presumably the doctor's, said,
"So..."
A pause as papers rustled.
"Mr. Jones, what do we have?"
A male voice, mellifluous, melodic, sexy, vaguely familiar.
"Well, a few years ago, my girlfriend and I were into some pretty rough stuff."
"S&M kind of stuff? What are we talking about?"
"Cock stuffing."
I blinked. The doctor didn't say anything. I would have paid good money to see his expression, or mine for that matter.
"You know, that's where you take..."
"I understand, Mr. Jones."
"Wait, don't cut him off. I didn't understand." What were they doing? My mind freewheeled until I stomped on the brakes. Imagination is a terrifying thing, and I was dizzy enough as it was. I didn't need to add hurling to today's indignities. The patient continued.
"Anyway, the thermometer broke. Inside, I bled a lot. But the doctor got everything under control, said there was no permanent damage."
"I hope they also told you to never use thermometers. They have surgical instruments. You can purchase them at any S&M store. They're called sounds. Same sensations, none of the downside."
"Good to know. But that sort of play was a short-term thing. I'm married now, and my wife has her limitations."
I narrowed my eyes. He made it sound like not getting her jollies from bondage and stuff was a shortcoming to be overlooked. To be honest, I sorta agreed.
"And you are here because..."
The doctor sounded nonplussed by all of it. "Just another night in the asylum." Mr. Jones continued.
"My toddler, he's only 3. Would you like to see a picture?"
"Perhaps later."
"He's the greatest kid."
Mr. Jones chuckled in that doting parent way.
"Anyway, he was running, and, well, he head-butted me in the groin, and I've got a bit of a problem."
I heard the doctor set down his chart, then snap on a pair of latex gloves.
"Let's see what's going on. You can take the towel off."
"Oh."
Then silence. Leaning so far toward the curtain, closing them off from view, straining to hear every word, I almost fell off the gurney. I caught myself, barely. Thank God somebody had locked the wheels.
"Oh my!"
Pain, or alarmed, or a bit of both, it was hard to tell. The doctor no longer sounded bored.
"Put that towel back on. I'll be right back."
He rushed out of the cubicle, glanced at me, then charged down the hallway in a flurry of white coattails. He
He disappeared through the door, which closed behind him.
Well, that was fun. Show over.
Tucking my hands under my thighs, I swung my feet and tried to picture what in the world that guy had been doing with that thermometer. Then I decided, being visual and all, I'd had enough trauma for the day. I thought about asking him myself, but abandoned that idea as being a bit tacky. Although I was really bored. An orderly had brought me down here months ago, parking me outside radiology while he went to check on the timing for my CAT scan. My stomach empty, my patients long since exhausted, I glanced through the curtain and up and down the abandoned hallway, plotting my next move. Aspirin had dulled the pain behind my right eye. The ringing in my ears had muted to the point where I no longer had to strain to make sense through the noise. The door at the end of the hall banged open, admitting two orderlies who ran in my direction. They dove into the cubicle next to me.
"Sir, you need to come with us."
"Where are we going?"
Mr. Jones's voice held a hint of panic. "The doctor needs to get the swelling down, relieve some of the pressure before permanent damage is done." As they wheeled Mr. Jones out, I strained to catch a glimpse. Oh my God! I was right! I knew him! Mr. Jones, my ass! That was Creighton Kreider. He'd been a big shot at Metro when I was a kid. We used to call him Crayfish Kreider, a bayou boy with a limp, clammy handshake. I guess his handshake wasn't the only limp member he had. Somebody I knew had dated him, a sort of walk on the wild side with an older guy, as I recall. One of those stupid things young women do. Which friend was it who had done crayfish? Oh, I couldn't remember. My brains were all scrambled. I shuddered at the thought as I watched the trio trundle down the hallway. The doorway at the end swallowed them whole, leaving me, once again, alone with my thoughts. Normally, I could tolerate my own company, enjoy it even, but I'd been alone with me so long I was boring myself. With the entertainment over, I seriously considered making a run for it. Somehow, I couldn't work myself down to the indignity of an ignominious escape, mooning the world as I dashed away in my hospital gown. Pride can be such a hindrance. On the verge of throwing dignity out the window, I slipped off the gurney, clutching my gown closed behind me. I whirled at the sound of the pneumatic doors at the far end of the hallway swinging inward. My mother, Mona, charged through the opening, in leggings and a loose white tunic to hide her baby bump, with her brown hair swinging loosely to her shoulders, her makeup impeccable, her skin glowing, and her eyes dark with emotion. She looked like my kid sister. That certainly made me feel better. Add her unparalleled ability to punch every button I had, and her presence had me clinging by my fingernails to the ledge of civility. Returning to my previous position on the gurney, I pasted on a weak smile and promised myself I would shelve the sarcasm. Okay, I would try to shelve it. Making promises in my condition was iffy at best. Mona hurried to my side, then clutched one of my hands in both of hers. Her skin was cold. I guess she really wasn't faking her worry. Although, with Mother, one never could be certain.
"Lucky! My God, honey!"
She leaned in and whispered, her voice shaking.
"It's like before!"
Another time, another place, another bomb. I shut my mind to the assault of the memories. "Don't go there, Mother. I'm okay." I looked around her but didn't see anyone. Amazingly, Mona understood.
"I left your father out front talking to the doctors. He'll be here in a minute."
She grabbed my hand, her face turning serious.
"There's something going on, Lucky."
"I'll say." That message was delivered with quite a punch this afternoon. She waved her hand as she glanced over her shoulder at the hallway doors.
"Not with Jimmy G. It's your father. He got some kind of note yesterday. It made him nervous and angry.
I haven't seen him like that in a long time.
What did the note say?
He wouldn't tell me, but I thought, with you two being thick as thieves, maybe he might tell you?
If she was jealous of my relationship with my father, she kept it hidden. Our bond was understandable, really. My father and I had the hotel business in our blood. A business person as well? My mother had experience of a different kind, although it was remarkably similar in some respects. Until a couple of months ago, she had been the proprietress of Mona's Place, the self-styled best whorehouse in Nevada. She and father had married recently, terminating my illegitimacy. I still wasn't sure how I felt about that. Glad for them, of course, but missing a ready excuse for the boulder I carried on my shoulder. Father can be awfully private, but I'll try, when the time is right. Mona's worried look fell away. Transferring responsibility always lightens the load. She graced me with a soft smile.
I heard you're a hero,
she said, her voice breathless with a grudging awe. Overstating. I tried to extricate my hand, but she wouldn't let go. The doors swung open again, this time admitting my father, Albert Rothstein, lovingly referred to as the Big Boss. One of the top-tier players in town, he was integral in making Vegas what it was today. Currently, he owned several properties, the Babylon by far his most grand. Yes, not only was he my father, he was also my boss. Not really advisable, but we seemed to be making it work. Hands in his pockets, he strolled toward me, his weak flash of a grin unable to fully camouflage his concern. A short man with salt and pepper hair, a square face, and chiseled physique, he oozed masculinity and something else. Power, perhaps? In his perfectly tailored dark gray Italian suit and summer weight wool with a very faint pinstripe, starched white shirt, deep purple tie, diamond-encrusted collar bar, and Gucci wingtips, he was every inch the power broker. With worry tinging his eyes and pulling his lips into a taut line, he was also every inch a concerned parent. He moved close but didn't reach out to me.
The doctors say you're going to be fine. The CAT scan is just prophylactic.
I gave him a lopsided grin.
You know how I feel about prophylactics.
Lucky!
Mona feigned shock. I rolled my eyes. Apparently, playing the owner's wife included heightened sensibilities not normally found in a former hooker. Father patted her hand.
Humor, honey. It's how Lucky deflects. You know that.
Most people yearn for that kind of insight from their loved ones. Not me. It just made me uncomfortable. Picking at the hem of my gown, I stared at the floor, commanding my thoughts into a logical formation, which sounds way easier than it was. Father, you remember Boogie Fleischman?
Boogie the bomber.
His eyes widened slightly as they held mine. A few beats passed before he answered.
That's going way back.
My father reached into his back pocket and tugged at his wallet. A slim, well-worn piece of leather. He opened it and extracted a $100 bill. Flipping the wallet closed, he tucked it back where he'd found it and began working the paper bill. His hands shook a bit, which surprised me. Creasing and folding, he glanced at me.
What'll it be?
Your choice. My mother and I watched him, his brows scrunched in concentration as he created. A few moments and he was finished. Taking my hand, he turned it over and pressed the finished product into my palm. After leaning in for a quick peck on my cheek, he let go of my hand and stepped back. Glancing down, I smiled. A heart. Origami, I said. Your way of deflecting. I hoped he'd heard my smile. Now, Boogie and Jimmy G? Weren't they partners or something? I can't remember, I was young.
Very.
My father's eyes had turned dark, his expression serious as he crossed his arms.
This reminds me of that time
Yeah, startling similarities. My tone shut him down. A close call so long ago. A bomb. Jimmy's place.
You don't need to remind me.
My father's voice was flat, hard. Tell me about Boogie and Jimmy G, I prompted. You've never really talked about it before. I've never heard your take.
Never had to give it to you.
Perhaps now might be a good time to fill me in. Amazingly, he didn't argue.
Not only partners, but the best of friends, they'd moved out here together. I can't remember exactly, but neither one of them was much more than legal at the time.
I finally extricated my hand from Mona's. When I patted the gurney next to me, she boosted herself up. Reflexively, my father helped her. Right side of the tracks, manners, from a wrong side guy. This was when? The 60s? My father nodded.
They'd both grown up in the restaurant business back in Jersey, so they came out here and set up shop together. A popular little Italian joint over on Eastern. The neighborhood was much more upscale then. All the casino folks and their families lived there.
What happened between them? My father ran a hand over his eyes.
Why are you asking me this? You can't possibly think...
For a moment I chewed on my lip, remembering. Mona looked at me owl-eyed.
Lucky?
I shut them both down with a look. I don't know what to think. Tell me what happened. He shot me a questioning look, but did as I asked.
Boogie fell in with the wrong crowd. You know Jimmy. He kept his nose clean, ran a nice place. Jimmy forced Boogie out. He didn't need that kind of trouble. Jimmy paid him fair, but Boogie held a grudge.
My father glanced around. I knew what he was looking for. A window. He loved to stare out through a window when he trotted down memory lane. No pretty vistas here, boss. This is a hospital, one of the most depressing places on the planet. I'm sure the lack of ambiance, although a bit sadistic, is purposeful. Makes us all want to go home. My father shrugged.
You know the rest of the story.
Tell me again. I want to be sure.
I'd like to hear it again, too,
Mona said, adding an encouraging nod.
In the 70s, the corporations moved in. There was a huge push to move the family out. We all knew that's how it'd have to go if we really hoped to put Vegas on the map.
Clearly on edge, my father again reached for his wallet, extracted another bill, then stuffed his wallet back in his pocket. Drawing on a lifetime of memory, he began working the bill as he talked.
Jimmy's place was doing real good. A high-class joint, you know?
At his glance, I nodded.
A lot of money was at stake in polishing Vegas's image. The dirty history was swept under the rug until the union moved in.
Absent-mindedly, he folded and refolded, his fingers dancing to a memory. The culinary union?
Yeah. They tried to fill the power vacuum left when the family got escorted out of town. As you can imagine, the business owners wanted no part of the union. To them, it was just more of the same.
A poor substitute for the mob.
Yeah.
My father gave me a rueful smile, then took a quick glance at the figure forming as he worked.
At least with the mob, they took care of their own. You knew what the rules were, and the price for breaking them. With the corporations and the union, it was warfare, a game with no rules.
But the union won, I said, mainly for Mona's benefit.
A lot of blood was spilt.
My father continued, a lost, angry look in his eyes.
The union had these thugs that would bomb restaurants that refused to become unionized. It was an ugly time in this town.
And Boogie Fleischman? What role did he play?
He found his calling. He loved blowing things up. Got pretty cocky about it, as I recall.
And that night at Jimmy's? Was the bomb his?
They didn't pin that one on him. But we were pretty sure it was.
My father glanced at me, then his eyes skittered away. If I didn't know better, I'd say he was nervous. He pretended to be absorbed in the tiny figure in his hands, putting the finishing touches on a swan with a graceful arched neck. Taking one of Mona's hands, he pressed it into her palm, then closed her fingers over it. Why didn't they pin it on him?
He had an airtight alibi.
What? My father didn't meet my eyes.
I don't know, but it stuck.
But he was sent up, right?
Lesser charges. Another incident.
My feet stopped swinging as I stilled. Then why were you sure the bomb had been his?
A few bits of the bomb were found in the wreckage. Parts of a wind-up clock. Pieces of a secondary trigger.
He rubbed his eyes, then took a deep breath.
Making a bomb is an art. The folks that do it usually have some particular background or knowledge that shapes how they fashion the device. With Boogie, he only knew one way.
Unique. Like a signature?
Exactly.
Ah, the punchline. I leaned back against the wall, once again glad the wheels on the gurney had been locked. They both looked at me owl-eyed. Silence stretched between us. Today's bomb, and the other one all those years ago, they were exactly the same, I said with a little more bravado than I felt. My father stared me down.
Are you sure?
An old wind-up clock that probably hasn't been for sale for decades. Seriously old dynamite.
Boogie paid his debt and went back east, last I heard.
My father sounded like he was working real hard to sell the story, but to me or to himself, I didn't know.
He didn't have anything to do with this, Lucky.
Why are you so sure? I pressed. Mona was right. Something was definitely going on with the big boss. Behind the paternal facade, he looked tired and angry. My father started to answer, then clamped his mouth shut at the sound of the doors opening one more time. This time, they admitted Romeo, with my EMT Galahad on his heels. As they approached, my father leaned in close.
We need to talk. Soon.
He touched my face, a lost look in his eyes. Then he stepped back, turning a smile toward the two men hurrying in our direction. Romeo, his clothes rumpled but his face bright, looked a whole lot better than I thought he should. Apparently, he could take bombs and late nights in stride far better than I. His sandy hair was cut short and gelled, with not a hair out of place. Well, except for the cowlick at the crown of his head, which so far had defied every styling substance short of superglue. His blue eyes clear, a bounce in his step. A ready smile creasing skin, otherwise unmarred by the passage of time. Looking at him, I had a glimmer of why people would mortgage their souls for a brief taste of lost youth. After nodding a greeting to my parents, the young and way too perky detective hooked a thumb over his shoulder as he stopped in front of me.
The ATF guys are chomping at the bit to talk to you.
I can't tell you how good that makes me feel.
Bombings attract a lot of attention, and you're the only one who got a look at the device.
Besides the one who put it in there. I gave him the best stern look I could muster. Speaking of which, shouldn't you be out chasing leads or something?
I'm working on it.
Romeo didn't seem to buy my act.
There's precious little to go on. Jimmy didn't have any video, so we're trying to get a bead on what folks saw.
Or thought they saw.
Eyewitnesses aren't the most reliable,
the young detective agreed.
So you can understand why ATF wants to get your take.
I have a head injury, haven't you heard? I pointed toward radiology. I'm waiting for them to diagnose the extent. Romeo smiled.
Nice try.
I could use some help here, I said to the EMT. I still don't know your name.
Nick.
He flashed those dimples. I was so glad I wasn't hooked up to one of those heart rate machines, or the thing would have been having a coronary about now.
And I'll be glad to testify to your instability if you'll go out to dinner with me. The detective here told me you were flying solo. He colored a bit at my scowl. Romeo, on the other hand, seemed unfazed.
Sweetheart, I cooed to the young detective, I don't need you pimping me out.
He just gave me an open, innocent look, making me smile. My mother, who had grabbed my hand again, cutting off the blood flow, leaned in and whispered so everyone could hear,
Honey, he's yummy.
None of this seemed to knock Nick off base, not even his introduction to my parents. Either he was clueless or supremely secure. Perhaps he merited some study. As I opened my mouth to respond to his invitation, the doors behind me slammed open, making me swallow my words. The orderly, who had abandoned me a lifetime ago, stepped into the group and announced,
They're ready for you.
As he reached to wheel me away, I gathered my dignity, hard to do in my current attire, and announced,
Well, today's the day we finally find out if I really do have mush for brains.
By the time I'd been stitched up, declared of sound mind and body, and given my discharge papers, the energy in the hospital was at an ebb. Daytime bombings under control, nighttime stabbings and overdoses still to come. Thankfully, my father had taken Mona home, relieving me of the energy drain. Romeo had left, presumably to tilt at windmills and right wrongs, keeping the world as we know it, status quo for yet another day. My clothes had been stuffed into a sack and unceremoniously thrown into a corner of my emergency room cubicle. Weariness crept through me, the aftermath of an overdose of adrenaline, as I pulled my Dana Buckman slacks and matching sweater in a deep midnight blue from the bag. Crumpled, peppered with holes, and reeking of smoke, they were all I had. It took me 3 tries to get my foot fully through the left pant leg without it coming out the large tear in the knee. Then I pulled my sweater on over my head. A bra seemed beyond my capabilities at the moment, so I left it in the bag. Reaching into the bottom, I came up empty. No shoes. And, as I recall, they'd been my favorite Ferragamos, also in blue. I'd had them resold 7 times. Or was it 8? Not that it really mattered. Finally covered, but still far from presentable, I scrawled my name on a stack of release forms left by the attending physician and padded toward the exit. Paxton Dane pushed himself upright and into my consciousness. How had I missed him holding up the wall next to the nurse's station? He ambled in my direction.
Man, you look like 40 miles of bad road.
Too bad I couldn't say the same about him. Several inches over 6 feet, with wide shoulders tapering to a boyish waist, dark wavy hair, emerald green eyes, cheekbones so sharp they looked carved out of stone, and a ready grin. He was spittin' polished in his creased 501s and starched button-down. Normally, his presence made me wary. Not only did he ooze some sort of male pheromone or something, which ought to be illegal around women in my weakened state, he also had a penchant for bending the truth. However, tonight, I'd never been so happy to see a friendly face. A former co-worker and rebuffed suitor, I thought we had now weathered the rocky road to friendship. His smile gave me a hint he agreed.
What are you doing here? Trying to get a jump start on my damsel in distress quota.
I'm honored to be the beneficiary of such self-aggrandizement. I took his proffered arm, looping mine through it. It's been a less than stellar day.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, he said, as he steered me away from the front entrance. You don't want to go out that way.
What about the ATF guys? I heard they were looking for me.
They agreed to meet you in your office. The packs of bloodhounds, feasting on small children and old people around here, scared them off. My truck's in the garage on the other side of the hospital. I happily leaned on Dane as I let him lead me through the labyrinth of UMC. We both knew the drill. The reporters would be corralled out front, while we sneaked out the back. The news hounds are waiting to tear out my throat, are they?
Or anoint you queen for a day. Nice touch saving the kid.
You know me. Anything for good copy.
Seriously.
His grip tightened on my arm.
Good job.
I felt heat rise in my cheeks. Praise made me uncomfortable. Praise for doing something I should have done made me mad. Thankfully, we were saved from embarrassment by Jimmy G barreling around the corner. He almost took us both out before he skidded to a stop.
Lucky! Man, where they been hiding you?
He looked like he was loaded for bear.
I've been looking for you all over. This guy out there.
Jimmy, his face a mask of indignation, hooked his thumb over his shoulder.
He was talking to me like, you know, all highfalutin, like he had more degrees than a thermometer, you know, but he was telling me something ain't right with your head.
Dane managed to keep a straight face. I, on the other hand, lost that battle. Jimmy, you know I come from a long line of nutcases. If somebody knocked some sense into me, it'd be a good thing. Jimmy pulled a handkerchief out of his back pocket and dabbed at his forehead.
True.
I tried to scare him with a frown. I don't think I pulled it off.
You could argue a bit, just to make me feel good, you know?
Jimmy seemed to ponder that concept as Dane and I gathered him in our wake, and we hurried through the hospital to the garage. Dane's F-150 languished across two parking spaces. A crew cab with four doors and a full 8-foot bed, it also stuck out so far that cars could barely squeeze around it. But in desperate need of a ride and a knight in shining armor, I decided now wasn't the time to point out his lack of consideration for the other drivers. The three of us piled in, Jimmy riding shotgun, while I hunkered down in the back, making sure to keep out of sight, even though this game of cat and mouse with the reporters was more for show than substance. After all, being the mouthpiece of the Babylon, I was pretty easy to find. But if I could lure them to my turf, then I held the upper hand. In theory. Ducking as Dane pulled out of the garage, I asked Jimmy, "What's left of your place?" He swiveled around to look at me.
"Look out front, Jimmy," Dane barked. "We don't want them to see Lucky in the back."
The little man whirled around like he'd been bitten on the ass by a rattler. As he stared straight ahead, he pulled down the visor in front of him. His eyes flicked to the mirror as he talked.
"It's like almost stranger than those books, you know?"
Books? Sometimes Jimmy's circuitous train of thought had me making nothing but left turns. I racked my brain. "You mean fiction?"
"Yeah, yeah. Stranger than fiction."
He shook his head.
"Those folks who make that stuff up, they gotta be touched, you know."
"Borderline personality disorder. All of them." Jimmy turned around to look at me.
"Really? Jimmy," Dane barked again. "Out the front. Lucky's not here."
"Well, technically I'm here, but I'm not all here." I could see the smile in Dane's eyes when he looked at me in the rearview mirror. "Jimmy, now that we've established that writers are nuts and truth is really stranger than fiction, why don't you give it to me straight?"
"That bomb."
He said the word bomb with such reverence it gave me the chills.
"That bomb didn't pack the punch it was meant to."
"So I have to turn in my hero badge?" I asked. Not sure how I felt about that. It was sort of fun being held up as a paragon of virtue. Of course it couldn't last, but I'd ride that horse as long as I could.
"They gave you a medal? Really?"
Jimmy sounded awestruck. "Kidding."
"Oh, right."
He didn't sound too pleased that my sarcasm had done a flyby. Couldn't say I blamed him. I even irritated myself on occasion. So I sympathized.
"I was saying," Jimmy groused,
According to the ATF guys, it looked like the bomb was made with some old stuff.
So not as much bang for the buck? Jimmy didn't laugh.
Even still, it could have killed somebody. A lot of somebodies if it hadn't been for you.
So the bomb, I said. Decidedly uncomfortable when hip deep in emotional quagmire, I redirected the conversation back to solid ground. Was it like somebody maybe used an old blueprint?
Yeah. They found pieces of an old clock that hadn't been for sale for decades. They said the bomber had to buy that thing at a flea market or something.
Or they got it from somebody's stash from a long time ago? This time when Jimmy swiveled around and stared at me, his eyes huge and angry, Dane didn't bark. I nodded at Jimmy's silent question. You wouldn't know where Boogie Fleischman is, would you?
Boogie.
Jimmy's voice was low with a hint of menace that gave me goosebumps. Turning inward, he was quiet for a while. When he spoke, his voice was hoarse and soft. I had to strain to hear him.
I went up and saw him the day he got sprung.
I didn't know that. I pushed myself up onto the seat and leaned back. If the reporters were around, they had to be behind us. Good thing Dane had several shotguns hanging in the back window. Not only was the view inside the truck obscured, but we could defend ourselves if necessary. How many years did he do?
30's what he got. I don't recall exactly how many he did, but he got out.
He paused, then whistled.
It's been maybe 20 years ago, I bet. Hell of a long time to keep a grudge, Dane muttered.
I couldn't read the emotion in his voice, but there was something there. I leaned forward, closer, but still scrunched down a bit. When you went to see him, what'd you guys talk about? At the strip, Dane took a left toward the Babylon.
Old times, he offered.
For once, someone else said what I was thinking. A sad expression tugged at Jimmy's features.
I know you're making fun, but that's all we had to talk about. There was nothing else. I tried to make it right between us, but he wouldn't have nothing to do with it.
Some people just have to hang on to bad feelings, Jimmy. I reached over the back of the seat and squeezed his shoulder. Not much you can do about it.
Last thing Boogie said to me, he was going back to Jersey to pick up the pieces. Then he'd be back. And he'd be gunning for me.
Jimmy's face hardened, his eyes narrowing to dark slits.
But not just for me.
Who else was in the creep's crosshairs? I asked. Could Boogie really be back? Or did we have a copycat? And who was the target? And why now? Hell, most of the bit players were probably dead by now.
Your father?
Okay, that grabbed me by the short hairs. Me and my misplaced smugness. The big boss? My stomach clenched as my blood ran cold. I touched the bandage on my forehead. A throbbing pain had pierced the heavy dose of local anesthetic. Waving away the offer of pain medication probably wasn't the smartest stunt I'd pulled lately. I was never quite as tough as I thought, which, all things considered, probably wasn't a bad thing.
Yeah. Back in those days, your father was willing to help clean up Vegas. He made a lot of enemies.
Several lifetimes ago, Jimmy.
But it was personal.
His normal smile absent, Jimmy looked tired.
People are like elephants when it comes to that shit.
I let my thoughts travel back in time. Yeah, some things you just can't forget. Jimmy reached for my hand, which I gave to him across the seat back. He squeezed it hard as his eyes bored into mine.
Do you remember?
Like it was yesterday, I whispered, half afraid that remembering would make it real all over again. It was the same bomb, Jimmy. Put in the same place. Too coincidental to be anything other than intentional. Somebody's sending you a message. We stared at each other for a moment, connected by a memory. Boogie's back. Even though a long time had passed, I felt it in my bones. I grabbed my phone, hit a familiar number, then pressed it to my ear. The big boss's phone rang and rang. No one answered. Chapter 2. Against all odds, me and my little band of musketeers made it to my office without being jumped by a pack of roving reporters. Breathing a sigh of relief, I let Dane pull open the door. Jimmy motioned me in front of him. Unaccustomed to such chivalry, I wasn't above appreciating it when presented. As was customary, my assistant, Miss P., didn't look up when I entered. And yet, despite not getting a visual, somehow she knew it was me.
Lucky, where the hell have you been? The phone has been jumping out of its cradle. For some reason, every reporter in the state wants your comments on some explosion. Why would they...
Her voice trailed off when she looked up. For once, she was speechless. I had a front row seat, which could explain some of their enthusiasm. She jumped up.
Are you okay?
The doctors at UMC seemed to think so. Either that, or they did all they could and sent me to work to die. Jimmy took a chair against the wall of windows overlooking the lobby below. Sometimes I loved to stop and look through the window, my day being reoriented watching all the happy people. Today would take more than that, so I didn't bother. Dane disappeared into the kitchenette in the back. Thankfully, as late as it was, the bird, our foul-mouthed office mascot, had been covered for the night. One less strident voice to grate on already raw nerves. I propped a hip on the corner of Miss P.'s desk. One glance at the huge pile of messages in my box left me on the verge of apoplexy. On the theory that actually picking them up conferred responsibility, I waved my finger at the stack. Can you give me the high points? I'll take care of them. That took my breath. Wow, really? That's what you pay me for. She raised an eyebrow. I couldn't tell whether it was a statement or a challenge. And here I thought I paid you to give me a hard time. We grinned at each other. Why did all of my relationships use the dialect of obfuscation? A dance around saying what we really meant? Since I was the only common denominator, I guessed the path to the answer started in my backyard. However, I wasn't in the mood for playing in that sandbox, so I shelved it until my next life. Miss P. cleared her throat.
There is one thing.
Her eyes didn't hold mine. What? Something you can't handle? Oh, goody.
Flash is in your office.
This time, her gaze, open and pleading, held mine.
Short of calling security, I couldn't stop her. She breezed in here without a word, and I didn't think you'd want her thrown out.
Not today. Well, not yet, anyway, but the jury's still out. I really did not need to deal with Flash right now, I thought, as I teetered on the precipice of self-pity. Dane came to my rescue when he returned with a tumbler full of amber liquid. Is that what I think it is? My hand shook as I reached for the glass, which probably should have worried me. But my worry plate was full, so I shelved that also.
A medicinal dose of Wild Turkey 101.
Bowing slightly, he handed it to me. I would have kissed him, but, given our checkered romantic history of thrust and parry, that would have been supremely stupid, even for me. Instead, I grabbed the glass and tossed back half of it in one gulp. The fact that it was a Flintstone jelly jar made me look like more of a lush than I am. At least that's what I told myself. The liquid burned a fiery path all the way to my stomach, where it burst in an explosion of warmth. My pride, having long since abandoned this sinking ship,
I sighed. Thus fortified, I dared a glance into Dane's emerald eyes. Thanks. I've got to get busy putting out fires. He took the hint, motioning to Jimmy.
Come on, I'll buy you dinner.
Marshalling my thoughts, which was a lot like collecting fireflies on a still summer evening, I waited until the door had closed behind them before I divvied up the responsibility pie with Miss P. I'll deal with Flash. You tell security to keep the rest of the riffraff out. When the ATF guys show up, buzz me, but don't let them in until I'm ready, okay? Oh, and get the beautiful Jeremy Whitlock on the phone. Here in person would be even better. How is he at finding the scent on a trail that's gone cold? The best, she grinned. Of course she'd say that. 15 years her junior, Jeremy had stolen her heart, trading his in return. So her opinion was highly suspect. Flash sat at my desk, her feet propped on an open drawer, her phone tucked between her shoulder and her ear as she scribbled notes, nodding occasionally. One stylish pink stiletto dangled from her foot as she wiggled it. Her bright red curls were pulled back from her face and corralled with a neon orange scarf. In jeans and a t-shirt stretched over her ample chest, well beyond the boundaries of good taste, she looked like a woman trolling for a fat wallet, which, of course, was a ploy. Behind the bimbo facade lurked a woman with more IQ points than an Ivy Leaguer. Giving me a quick glance, she raised a finger. As she wound up her call, I sunk into one of the chairs across from her and nursed the rest of my whiskey. Flash had peeled back the plastic tarp covering all the furniture when she'd set up shop in the construction zone I called my office. Caught in the throes of unbridled optimism, I'd given Miss P a promotion. She was now what I used to be. Unfortunately, as the me I used to be, she hung out where I used to hang out, my old office. We'd knocked out a wall to make room for a workspace for me in an adjacent storage room. I had no doubt that my little corner of the universe would be a nice place to store my stuff, if it was ever completed. Two workmen with one hammer had been at it so long and made such little progress, I was seriously considering adopting them. Now, tarps protected all the furniture. The only light was a weak circle cast by a lone light bulb dangling from a wire. A hole in the outer wall, my future private entrance, necessitated us locking all the important stuff in drawers and filing cabinets. To be honest, I wasn't there that much, so the whole thing never rose high enough on my priority list to actually do anything more than whine about it. "I've phoned in my story on the explosion," Flash announced as she slammed the receiver in its cradle, then set her feet on the floor and kicked the drawer shut with one foot. Leaning across the desk, she fixed me with her most serious investigative reporter stare. "My deadline is almost here, and I'm still a little thin on details. That's where you come in." "I'm fine. Thank you for asking." She waved away my grousing. "Hell, it was just a little bomb. You're walking and talking. How bad can it be?" "Besides a blistering headache and a scar on my forehead?" She opened her eyes wide. "Oh, I hope it's a lightning bolt like Harry Potter. And add Voldemort and the Dementors to the list of people after me? Why not? If you include some vampires, zombies, and maybe a werewolf or two, you could sell your story and make billions." Flash, her pencil poised, morphed back into her reporter mode. "But if a bomb is all we've got, we'll have to make do. What can you tell me about the explosion?" "More than you can imagine, but some of it has to be off the record, at least for now. I need your help." I took another sip as I tried to figure out how much to tell. Flash and I went way back, all the way to our time at UNLV, where she worked to keep our names out of the paper, and I kept us out of jail. A match made in heaven. We'd had each other's backs ever since. I'd trust her with my life. Normally a figure of speech,
but this time I might have to for real. I'll give you the skinny on Jimmy G's, at least enough to make you a hero with your editor. In return, I need to tell you a story that's totally between you and me. She chewed her lip, then nodded once. I settled back and opened the door to a long time ago, to memories I'd protected myself from for a lifetime. When I was a kid, Jimmy had a place over on DI, east of the Strip. The Danger Zone. Everybody went there. Late at night was the best. The entertainers would gather there after their last act. Often, they'd play the piano and sing, just for the fun of it.
I've heard of that place. There was something about it.
Flash's face was open, her eyes intense.
Didn't it burn down?
I shrugged. Sorta. I was there. Memories washed over me. It was late. The place was almost empty.
How old were you?
4.
What were you doing in a joint like that late at night at that age?
Indignation tinged Flash's voice, which I thought was cute. Naive, but cute. Please, it was Vegas, old Vegas, and I was there with my mother. She was 19 at the time and not long on good judgment. I leaned over and grabbed a paperweight off the corner of my desk, a golden cockroach in lucite, a gift from the employees after dealing with one of our more creative guests. Turning the weight over and over, I stared into it as if looking through a window to the past. Apparently, Jimmy was the go-between for my parents. He gave them a safe place to meet. Of course, I didn't know the big boss was part of my family then. Wallowing in visions of the past, I paused for a moment. It's funny. I opened the door to the past, walked inside, and it seemed so crisp and clear, undiluted by the passage of time. We were waiting at the bar. Dean Martin was piped in over the loudspeakers. Mona was having a ginger ale. I looked at Flash with, I'm sure, a bewildered expression. Why would I remember that?
The mind has weird coping mechanisms.
I nodded, even though I had only a vague idea what she was alluding to. Actually, that could explain a lot, but we won't go there. Anyway, my father was a no-show, which wasn't normal for him. Mona was ready to leave, but I needed to go to the bathroom before we left. Those 60 miles back to Pahrump took longer then.
A bumpy blacktop, I remember, Flash said with a grin, and a great place for alien abductions, as I recall.
I felt a smile bloom across my face. You remember that guy?
He had the whole city going with his story.
Fun while it lasted. I adjusted myself in the chair. Aches and pains I didn't know I had whined for attention. But as I recall, by the end we were all ready for the aliens to come back and get him.
He got way more than his 15 minutes.
Flash nodded, then turned serious again.
So, back to Jimmy G's. You went to the bathroom.
I captured her eyes with mine. The story was the place burned, a grease fire.
That's not true.
I shook my head. It was a bomb.
Shit. No way.
I saw it, but I didn't know what it was. I paused as a shiver chased down my spine. Or was it up my spine? Who knew? Thank God I mentioned it to my mother.
The place was leveled, wasn't it?
I nodded, remembering. I was running, Mona pulling me. The explosion. What little was left burned. The building was a total loss.
But nobody died.
No.
Thanks to you.
No. Thanks to my big mouth and a boatload of guardian angels. Placing the paperweight back on the corner of my desk, I pretended to be consumed with getting it in just the right spot while I gathered myself. Flash didn't leave me alone with my thoughts for long.
You think the two are related?
I haven't a clue, but I have a real bad feeling. I glanced at her. The bombs were identical. She raised her eyebrows, then made a quick note.
Okay, so what do you want from me?
Keep that bomb part on the QT for now. I've got to chase a cold trail, and I don't need the bright lights of public scrutiny chasing my moles back underground.
That's all?
Flash's words dripped with sarcasm.
I always do right by you, so quit grousing.
And I want you to do what you always do. Chase down witnesses and put pieces together. Give me a better picture of the whole story surrounding the original bombing.
You got it.
She tapped her pencil on a notepad.
But I got a story to beef up, and if I'm gonna sit on what you just told me, which, by the way, will blow the town wide open, for that, you need to give me enough to get me the friggin' Pulitzer.
Like a racehorse at the bell, Flash charged off full of investigative zeal, and I turned to meet the day. Feeling the need to make myself a little more presentable, I grabbed a new outfit from my old office closet, jeans, a sweatshirt, and Nikes. After wiping off the worst of the grime, a shower was beyond my current capabilities, I touched up my face, then called it good. Curiously, my debriefing at the hands of the ATF had gone quickly. The questions were few, and I was able to give them only what I knew, keeping what I feared to myself. I called Romeo to give him my suppositions, though. As I knew he would be, he'd been a bit skeptical. But he assured me he'd look into it, though. From his tone, I knew he had about as many ideas as I did about where to start. Zip. Point doodle. The big boss could shed some light, but he still wasn't answering his phone. I tried to be calm. If Mona wasn't concerned, then I shouldn't be. At least that's what I kept telling myself. It didn't work. Even with the clock ticking into the third hour of a new day, I was wide awake, hyped on worry. Before heading off to slay dragons, I glanced into the small mirror hanging on a nail in the wall next to the door to Miss P's office. I brushed my hair, even though it didn't need it, as if outer order would bring inner order. It never worked that way, I knew that, but I couldn't resist trying. Squinting, I gave my face a good going over. High cheekbones and blue eyes were the high points. The steri-strips covering the sutures in my forehead and the blooming dark pool of blood collecting under my right eye were definitely the not-so-high points. Overall, presentable appeared to be aiming a bit high. Desperate for food, but feeling pretty good about myself despite my appearance, I stepped out of my office and ran headlong into Miss P., the beautiful Jeremy Whitlock, and my second assistant, Brandy, who was younger than I ever remembered being and prettier than I had ever dared hope. Actually, I ran into their asses as they huddled around the phone with Miss P holding the receiver in the center of the group so they could all hear. Anything I should know about? The three of them jumped as if I'd fired a gun over their heads. Miss P. slammed the receiver back in its cradle. Each of them busied themselves with some feigned task. No one met my eyes, and no one answered my question. I just stood there, waiting. Finally, Miss P. broke. "It's Teddy," she started, but at my glare, she clamped her mouth shut, her lips forming a thin line. Narrowing her eyes, she seemed to debate the wisdom of continuing. Apparently, she spied a chink in my armor, so she bolted through. "That man has it bad. He leaves 20 or 30 messages a day for you. One of these days, you're going to have to cut him some slack and call him back," she said in a breathless run-on, as if rushing the words would lessen the blow. "When the fountains at the Bellagio freeze over," I enunciated each word, trying to shut her down. "You know, ice was a real problem when they first opened. Something to do with water pressure?" Brought up short by my narrowing eyes, Miss P. retrenched. "But back to Teddy." "A very bad time for this topic. Magnanimous would not be an appropriate adjective for my mood at the moment. Besides, I've moved on. Perhaps, but you must deal with the past before you can embrace the future. I would have laughed if I thought it wouldn't hurt my bruised ribs. You know how I feel about your platitudes. Pabulum for the easy answer crowd. Groan from a kernel of wisdom. Apparently willing to risk bodily harm, she put both hands on her desk and her life on the line as she leaned closer. I know he left. I know he hurt you. I think he finally realizes what he had. And what he turned his back on? I glanced at Brandy and Jeremy, unsure whether I really wanted an audience for this conversation. When contemplating homicide, leaving witnesses is not considered wise, or so I'd been told. Caught in the act of paying attention, they quickly dove back into whatever task they were pretending to do. Putting my eyes to shield my sorrow, I sunk into a chair across from Miss P's desk. My self-satisfaction dissolving in a mist of memories, I tried to bury the pain, but, like a trick candle, it kept flaring. The truth of it was, Teddy had broken my heart. No, he had shattered it, and almost worse, I'd lost not only a lover, but my best friend. Someday, I might find it in my heart to forgive him, but I don't know how to ever trust him again. Maybe this will help. Despite Jeremy vigorously shaking his head, Miss P punched the button on the message machine. I wanted to run, but, barely breathing, I couldn't move, a bystander transfixed by the carnage after a devastating wreck. The message beeped. I heard random musical instruments in the background, like a symphony warming up before a show, and mingled voices. Then Teddy's voice.
Lucky, this is for you. I wrote the melody a while ago. The lyrics, well, I've been doing a lot of growing up lately. Listen, I hope you'll understand. Although still pretty rough, the song has heart. My heart. I titled it, Lucky for Me.
The strains of a song started, then his beautiful smooth voice, cutting my heart wide open.
Fuck!
I buried my face in my hands. Music, the language of love. Teddy could wield it like a weapon. Do you want me to stop it? Miss P asked, concern replacing her scolding tone. I shook my head. I'd listen. In her own way, Miss P was right. The sooner I faced him, the sooner I could put him behind me. Naturally, the song was brilliant. A song of regret, of longing, of being on the road and wanting to come home. Teddy could pluck my heartstrings like an angel with a golden harp. But where did the act end and the real guy begin? Happily ever after? Was such an illusion. Silence filtered in around us as Teddy's song came to a close and the machine beeped, signaling the end. No one said a word. What was there to say? Wow, Miss P finally whispered as she straightened and patted her skirt down. She reached over and squeezed my hand. Love sucks. A ringing endorsement. I flashed her a tentative smile. I don't even want to know what that implies about those of us who keep diving in, hoping the waters are deep enough that we don't break our necks. I would have jumped to my feet and started pacing, but given the current state of my body, I decided against it, despite the fact that unspent nervous energy usually made me dangerous. Miss P reared back as I pushed myself to my feet. Apparently, she had taken my hollow threats to heart. I liked it. Time to get this day underway. What do we have? Leaning back, she ran a hand through her short, spiky hair. Honey, you may be amped up on adrenaline or whatever they gave you at the hospital, but the rest of us are ready for some shut-eye. Oh. I glanced at the other two. The whole lot of them looked like their go-juice tanks were pegged on E.
Sorry, my clock is all messed up. Go home.
Miss P retrieved her purse from a desk drawer. Brandy did the same. Then Jeremy stepped over my outstretched legs and opened the door, holding it for the two of them.
Oh, hang on. I almost forgot.
I tried not to be bothered by the fact that thoughts of Teddy made thoughts of bomb-making idiots on the loose flee like animals before a forest fire. Jeremy, can you try to track down a guy named Boogie Fleischman? He paroled out of Indian Springs about 18 to 20 years ago, I think.
Boogie? Is that his given name?
Probably not, I thought back. Had I ever heard him referred to by another name? If I had, I couldn't remember, but I knew who would.
I can get you that info.
He flashed his dimples.
No worries. Finding his real name won't be the hard part.
Hey, if it was easy, what would we need you for?
If it was easy, then I could retire and try my hand at stripping at Olympic Gardens. I hear they make real money.
I swallowed hard, clamping my mind shut to that visual.
Over my dead body,
Miss P announced as she hooked her arm possessively around his waist.
Come on, stud bucket, time for some rack time.
Woman, I thought you'd never ask.
He let himself be pulled through the door.
What are you going to do?
Brandy asked as she stepped over me, following the others.
Take a dose of French medicine to cure what ails me.
Most of the casual dining restaurants at the Babylon were round-the-clock establishments. The Burger Palais was no exception. Even though the dining hour had long since passed, the restaurants would be gearing up for the post-gambling, post-clubbing crowds. And I hoped a certain French chef would still be manning his grill, burgers being the perfect antidote to too much alcohol. In fact, Jean-Charles Bouclet was the perfect antidote to all of my excesses, including adrenaline. For some reason, I decided to take the stairs from the mezzanine to the lobby below. Halfway down, my body groaned like a gear frozen under decades of rust. Holding the handrail, I eased down one step at a time, then gingerly pushed through the fire door at the bottom. As I knew it would be, the lobby was quiet. Only a few couples wandered hand in hand, lingering next to our version of the Euphrates, a flowing stream that wound its way from reception and into the casino beyond. Spotted with arched bridges and lined with flowering plants, the water was a nice oasis. Home to fish and fowl, it was one of the Babylon's signature features, along with the ceiling of blown glass birds arced in flight, and an indoor ski slope on the far side of the lobby covered with man-made snow, now being groomed for tomorrow. Marble floors inset with multicolored mosaics, brightly colored cloth in varying vivid hues tented over the reception desk, and groves of palms subtly hinted at the Persian theme so exquisitely amplified in other parts of the hotel. At reception, I angled to the left, heading under the arch announcing the bazaar, our singular collection of high-end purveyors. Here, you could buy anything your heart desired, from Ferraris to French couture, and jewels worthy of a sheik's first wife. Many of the shops were shuttered at the moment. Even the lights had been doused in the Temple of Love, our wedding chapel, and Samson's, the hair salon and spa, where a staff of buff and beefy Samson lookalikes awaited to ply each guest with champagne and attention. I didn't care. All I wanted was a French Burgermeister. In the interest of full disclosure, Jean-Charles Bouclet was so much more than a burger man. The owner of a chain of eponymous eateries around the world, he was the toast of the gastronomic set, and a coup for the big boss when he lured him to Vegas to open a high-end restaurant in our new property, Cielo. Technically, the new hotel was my pet project,
so I could arrange my day to have the Frenchman perpetually near. Not a bad plan, especially since he had, well, we had leapt the boundaries of professionalism and taken our relationship into personal territory. So new, we were still feeling our way. I grinned at the pun. Puns were the least of my many vices. And I flushed a bit at the memories. His lips on mine, a jolt of heat where skin touched skin, the smile in his eyes, the sound of his voice. So perfect. Of course, there was Jean-Charles's son, Christophe, to complicate things. A very small boy, he was a very big concern. I had yet to meet him, but he would be arriving soon. My skills with men were bad enough. But little boys? Oh, I was flying blind. Needing a hug and a smile, I hurried through the wide corridors, dodging a random gaggle of 20-somethings. The young women, sheathed in tiny tubes of lycra and balancing on impossibly high heels, held tightly to the arms of young men, stylish in their t-shirts, velveteen blazers, and French jeans. Laughing, the group rocketed on a high-octane mix of alcohol and youthful enthusiasm. For a moment, I felt the bite of jealousy, then came to my senses. I wouldn't go back there to save my soul. At my age, I no longer had the energy to handle all that desperation, which was probably a good thing. I had a sneaking suspicion the wisdom that supposedly came with age was really apathy, resulting from an inability to muster enough ergs to care. If true, it was one of life's many cruel jokes. But it didn't really bother me. Apparently that whole apathy thing had come home to roost. Was that a good thing or a bad thing? Somehow I didn't care. And as simple as that, the whole question had become a tautology. The double wooden doors bracketing the entrance to the Burger Palais stood open. Delicious smells of onions sautéing, bacon frying, and grass-fed beef sizzling over a charcoal fire beckoned all those who passed. Salivating in earnest now, I ducked through the doorway. The hostess stand was empty, so I breezed on in. With knotted wooden floors, exposed brick walls, green leather chairs and banquettes, and checkered tablecloths, the place was elegantly casual, invoking the customers to relax and enjoy, or so said Jean-Charles, and I wasn't one to disagree. Brass sconces exuded a subtle light, adding to the welcoming ambiance. An ornate wooden bar from Scotland arched from the right-hand side of the dining room. Dotted with stools, also in green leather, it called to me. Another medicinal libation sounded like what the doctor ordered. However, since I had no idea what or how much the staff at UMC had plied me with, I decided to forgo, at least momentarily. Besides, drinking alone had such negative connotations. Not that that got in my way very often. Instead, I angled to the left toward the kitchen. Behind a wall of glass, a variety of culinary types carried out their tasks to the rocking sounds of Coldplay. Standing behind gleaming stainless steel workstations, replete with requisite shelving behind and refrigeration below, they juked to the music as they sliced and diced. If I tried that, I'd be minus a few digits in no time. Casting my glance wider, my heart fell. Rinaldo, Jean-Charles's right-hand man, worked the grill. Jean-Charles's normal position. A mountain of a man with curly black hair, a round face topping at least 3 chins, and hands the size of salad plates, he beamed when he saw me. Motioning toward the back of the kitchen with his spatula, he raised his voice to be heard above the music.
"He's back there, but he's not real sociable. Something about bad crabs."
I bit off the obvious reply as clearly in poor taste. Apparently, my appearance finally registered with the big man as his eyes grew worried, wiping the smile out of them.
"Hey, cutie, you okay?"
Dodged a bullet.
"Seriously?"
No, that was just a shallow attempt to get attention and sympathy. And sidestepped the question, I thought, but I didn't say that part. Apparently it worked, as he moved aside to let me pass without further elaboration. Using the term office to describe Jean-Charles's workspace was a bit optimistic. A battered wooden French schoolboy table tucked into a corner and a three-legged wooden stool hardly qualified, at least in the American vernacular of office excess. Functional with a bare bulb on a flexible metal stand clamped to the side of the desk, the only piece of envy-worthy equipment was a brand-new 24-inch iMac. With the French being the world's arbiters of cool, it made perfect sense my chef would be a Mac man. His back to me, Jean-Charles hunched in concentration as he straddled the stool, his feet hooked in the legs. He didn't notice me until I bent and placed a kiss just below his right ear. Pulling air in through his nose, he straightened.
Ah, Lucky. How did you know I've been missing you?
I couldn't resist nibbling on his ear, taking delight in his shiver before I stepped back. I didn't know, but I was hoping. Still seated, he turned on the stool to face me. Grabbing me, he pulled me onto his lap, then leaned back to get a good look. I tried not to let him see that he took my breath. Even with a pair of cheaters resting on the end of his nose, his blue eyes going all serious and dark as they roamed over my face, his full lips thinning into a line of concern, and weariness deepening his laugh lines, he was by far the best dish in the house. Looping an arm around his neck, I wove my fingers through his hair, which, to my delight, he wore a trifle long. A medium brown with a slight curl, I found playing with the tendrils that drifted over his collar irresistible. His thighs, long and lean, felt solid under me. His chest was a hard, comforting backdrop to lean into. What was it, people said? Never trust a thin chef? I wondered if that meant only his culinary skills or his character also. One way or the other, I didn't care. With the back of the fingers of his right hand, he touched my cheek, then he ran his thumb lightly over the cut on my forehead before kissing it.
You will tell me about this day?
Yes. I maneuvered my weight off his lap, fearing that if I stayed there any longer, I would cut off blood flow in his legs. Perhaps over dinner? Although, I've been told you're dealing with bad crabs. I tried to keep my expression passive, but I must have failed.
Oui. But why are you looking at me this way, like it is some joke?
Oh, it's one of those American slang things. I grabbed his hand, pulling him up. I didn't step back. Instead, brazen hussy that I am, I stepped into his embrace. I'll explain it another time. Why did having his arms around me feel better than anything I could imagine? Well, almost anything. And that involved him as well, but we hadn't gone there. Yet.
I will prepare your favorite, if you will open a bottle of wine.
He released me momentarily, then grabbed my hand, leading me through the kitchen. Apparently, the word had gone out that the captain was on the bridge. Someone had lowered the music.
There is a very nice Malbec that I've been saving for us.
I think it will go nicely with sliders prepared as you like. He glanced back at me.
How do you say it?
Fully loaded?
This is it, yes.
He took the spatula that Rinaldo proffered. With a practiced glance at the few orders listed on the screen inset in the backsplash, he dove in.
The wine is,
I know, in our cabinet behind the bar. He smiled but didn't look at me, his concentration now captured by the task at hand. With Jean-Charles, food was serious business. We were so compatible that way. Dinner had passed in easy chatter and the comfort of the developing warmth between us. Even though I think he knew that I'd only given him the high points, Jean-Charles had let me off easy. I mean, what was there to say, really? I was in a building when a bomb exploded,
Wrong place, wrong time.
The sliders had been as advertised, fully loaded and delicious. I'd stopped counting after my third, but I had taken notice when we'd popped the cork on the second bottle of wine. That had been two glasses ago. Jean-Charles leaned across the table, capturing my hands in his.
"This city, it is more dangerous than they say."
I gave him a sheepish shrug. "It just seems that way. I have a particular knack for sticking my nose where I shouldn't." His face clouded. Idioms were indecipherable to him. I kept forgetting that. "If there's trouble, I usually can find it," I added.
"You will have to fix that."
He looked serious. Right after I solve global warming, bring peace to the Middle East, and a stable economy to the EEU. A glow suffused me as I looked at our entwined hands, then I shot him a rueful half-grin. Besides, finding trouble is one of my best things. God knows I have far too few skills to abandon even one.
"Then you will be careful. I do not want to lose you."
He leaned closer. I met him halfway. A jolt of fire. The kiss singed every nerve ending and seared every synapse. Reveling in the connection, I lingered, savoring. As he pulled away, little aftershocks chased through my body, then coalesced into a ball of warmth somewhere deep inside. Taking a deep breath, I closed my eyes. I felt a smile tug at the corner of my mouth. Then my heart stopped as my phone sang out at my hip. Actually, it was the Black Eyed Peas singing "I've Got a Feeling." Either way, the shock was a cold jolt of jump juice to the heart. I grabbed the thing and pushed to talk.
"What?" "Lucky?"
My father didn't sound happy.
"I'm at your place. We need to talk. Now."
Chapter 3. "Christ Almighty," I said, as I burst through the door to my apartment on the top floor of the Babylon's West Wing. "Why have you been so hard to find? Where have you been?" All the lights were off, but I could see my father standing at the window, silhouetted by the lights of the strip, streaming through the wall of glass. "And why the hell are you standing here in the dark?" I stopped a few feet from him. He didn't turn. Instead, he stood there as still as a statue. He didn't respond. Unsure what to do, I considered checking his pulse. After all, he wasn't exactly a spring chicken. Finally, he rescued me from my quandary.
"Will you get me a drink?"
he asked. His voice, low and emotionless, had a hard edge to it.
"Then join me."
"With your recent health scare, do you think drinking is a good idea?" He didn't answer, not that I expected him to. I didn't know what to think as I walked to the far wall and pressed a panel. The wall slid back, exposing a fully stocked bar. I decided on a 15-year-old single malt for him and a club soda with lime for me. I'd exceeded my legal limit already. Besides, keeping my wits about me would probably work in my favor. While I didn't know what he had to tell me, I knew it couldn't be good. Pouring the drinks into Steuben double old-fashioned tumblers, I added a couple of cubes of ice, then returned to his side with drinks in hand. He took his glass without question or acknowledgement, then took a long sip.
"The Glenmorangie?"
"Mm-hmm." I took a tentative sip of my soda, then wrinkled my nose at the tickle of the bubbles. Although I'd tried, I never had developed a taste for tasteless beverages. Was that even possible, I wondered? The lime helped, as did the bubbles. But still, they just effervesced the boring. The ice tinkled in my father's glass as he lifted it to his lips.
"The 18?
No, the 15. A bit more fire-in-the-belly action. I liked that from a Highland dram. That got a snort out of him.
"Lucky, I swear you're the best son a man could have."
As a card-carrying member of the boys' club, I'll take that as a compliment.
"As well you should."
He cleared his throat after another sip.
You may be tough and know your way around, but there's folks tougher than you.
No doubt. The lights of the strip flashed below us, an ever-changing neon display that could be seen from the International Space Station, or so I'd been told. To me, they were magic, a tangible reminder of all that is Vegas. The fun, the food, the shows, the money. And where there was money, like bloodhounds on a scent, the bad guys lurked in the shadows. But I didn't linger on that. They weren't part of my Vegas. At least, not until they started detonating bombs around town. You gonna tell me about that note you got? Startled, he glanced at me out of the corner of his eye.
It's nothing. I can handle it.
But it's upset you. I can help.
Not this time.
His tone held a subtle warning. I didn't care. When this shit really hits the fan, you can count on family. Isn't that what you tell me? The stern set of his jaw told me I was being stonewalled big time. I didn't like it. All it did was ramp up my worry meter.
Mother, your mother, and her hormones.
My father bit off each word like a rabid dog tearing into a carcass.
She's seeing boogeymen in every corner.
Boogeymen? An interesting word choice. And do I need to remind you that you wanted to talk to me? I analyzed his profile as he turned to stare out the window again. Tension hunched his shoulders slightly, bunching the muscles underneath his jacket. The skin stretched tautly over his cheekbones, his mouth drawn into a thin line, his chin set at a defiant tilt, inviting someone to take a swing. Mona was right. Something was going on. And being a man who solved his own problems, the big boss wasn't going to give it up. So, like him. I'd have to outflank him somehow. So you think I should be scared of Boogie Fleischman? I wiggled my glass, trying to work up an enthusiasm for a non-alcoholic beverage. It wasn't working. Boogie's gotta be like, what, 70?
Careful.
Hey, he may be tougher than me, but I'm sure I can outrun him. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught my father fighting with his smile.
Lucky, I swear.
Go right ahead if it feels good, but I'm too old to change. My arm circled his shoulders and I gave him a squeeze. Okay, just for you, until this thing blows over, I'll check the women's bathroom before I sit down for a meal.
Small comfort.
He handed his empty glass back to me.
I'm trying to give you a warning.
Did anyone ever find Boogie's stash?
His stash?
I had my father's interest now. I'd been told that back in the day, the bomb makers all had hiding places for their ingredients.
That stuff would be damn old by now.
My father's eyes snapped to mine as realization dawned. Precisely. I lifted the glass with an eyebrow raised in question. Another? At his nod, I headed toward the bar but kept talking. So, did they find his stuff?
Not that I'm aware of, but I wasn't in that loop.
I almost snorted in disbelief, but decided it wasn't consistent with my strong desire for self-preservation.
Lucky, this just adds more weight to my warning.
A warning. I heard you. But really, you know as well as I do. I couldn't do my job if I had to be afraid of every reprobate wishing to knock me down a peg. Truthfully, fear isn't my strong suit. I come by it naturally. When I returned to his side, my father took his glass and sipped. He swished the scotch around his mouth before swallowing.
I'm trying to tell you this time is different. Boogie being back, the bomb, just stirs up a bunch of old grudges, wrongs to be righted.
Great. A bunch of old farts all tilting at windmills? I threw back the rest of my drink, then almost choked. I'd been prepared for whiskey, not fizzy water. Just what we need for the 4th of July.
You really aren't going to take this seriously, are you?
My father sighed, a hint of frustration in his voice. Father, I was 4 when Boogie the Bomber got his balls busted. I can't imagine what beef he has with me. Besides, it's not me Boogie is after.
Jimmy can handle himself.
Not Jimmy. I waited until he turned to look at me. There's someone else Boogie has a beef with, at least according to Jimmy.
Who?
You.
Me?
My father shot me a half-assed smirk.
Tell him to take a number.
My point exactly. After my father left, I lingered at the window, this time with a glass of wild turkey. Perhaps it was a delayed life passing before my eyes experience in the wake of a near-death experience, or maybe just the echoes of emptiness pinging off the walls of my heart. But demons assaulted me. And what was that whole weird thing with my father? Usually not one to beat around the bush, he'd left me with the feeling so much had been left unsaid, that I'd gotten only one piece of the whole picture. He expected me to read the subtext when he knew better than anyone that I was a big print kind of gal. So how did one protect themselves from unknown evils? Who knew? The whole thought left me curiously defeated. A Pollyanna to the last, I'd always lived each day, seized each moment. When had that changed? If I was honest with myself, not one of my best things, I'd probably have to say the whole down-in-the-mouth lucky showed up when Teddy left. The fact that he had so much power over me should probably disgust me. But that's what happens when you give someone your heart, right? Short on answers but long on questions, I succumbed to the bone-bending weariness washing through me. Tossing back the last of my drink, this time getting the anticipated high-octane hit, I put the empty glass on the bar, then headed toward the bedroom. While it was a nice place to sleep, it wasn't home. All my things were still packed away in the boxes stacked against the wall. A metaphor for my life. I wondered what I was waiting for. The 4th of July in Vegas. A giant citywide party. To be honest, it was my favorite holiday, even above New Year's Eve. Less structured, less controlled, the 4th allowed for a bit more individual expression. All the major properties on the Strip participated. Some had private fireworks shows choreographed to a headliner concert. Some had public displays of pyrotechnic excess. All had pool parties with celebrity hosts. And for those of us riding herd on the whole thing, sleep would be at a premium. Somehow, I was the first to arrive at the office. The ongoing construction in my new corner of this command center obviated the need for a lock and key. Anyone could step through the gaping hole that would someday be an appropriate private entrance, or so they promised. But I had my doubts. Flicking the lights on as I wandered into my old office space, I found myself still curiously wired even after only 4 hours of fitful shut-eye. Bucked with life, I stuffed my Birkin in a drawer, then locked it and pocketed the key. Before I lost my nerve, and bracing for the always colorful greeting I knew would be forthcoming, I whisked off the cover on the large birdcage in the corner next to the picture window, overlooking the lobby below. Newton, my multicolored, foul-mouthed macaw, didn't disappoint.
Bitch! Slap you! Slap you bad!
Glad you remember me, bird. I grabbed a slice of browned apple from the plate next to the cage and stuck it through the bars, taking care not to offer the bird any of my delicate flesh. He had a hard time discerning between the tasty and the tender. After eyeing me, he slid warily across the bar toward the delicacy. With a,
"Fuck you!"
he snagged the morsel, then promptly retreated to the other side of the cage to savor it. At least my relationship with the bird was straightforward.
I fed him, he tolerated me. Sort of like a lot of marriages I'd witnessed. Maybe that explained my difficulty with commitment. With the bird fed and mollified for the moment, I busied myself with coffee preparations. Don Francisco Vanilla Nut, my caffeine delivery vehicle of choice. Cupping my hands around the warm mug, I inhaled the aroma, then took my first tentative sip as I wandered into the war zone. After flipping on the light, I peeled back the plastic sheet protecting my desk and chair and settled in. I was still anticipating my second jolt of Java when an angry male voice shattered my joie de vivre.
Lucky, you damn well better be in here.
Coffee flew as I jumped at the shout. Thankfully, I managed to avoid staining my white shirt and slacks, but the papers on my desk took a direct hit. Grabbing a paint cloth, I dabbed at the liquid pool. Xavier Sang, all 5 feet and a couple inches of wiry mail, stuck his head through the doorway.
You and me, girl. We gotta chat.
With his straight hair dyed an unnatural shade of bright red and hanging across his forehead, the clean, flat planes of his face unmarred by even the hint of a beard, his eyes dark and slanted to give him just the hint of exotic, Xavier looked more like a kid heading to UNLV than the master miracle worker he was. The latest in a long line of a very prominent Chinese family who made their fortune working magic with gunpowder, he was my Big Bang expert. I'd always wanted to ask him about his name. Xavier wasn't exactly a common choice for the number one son, but I'd never worked up the nerve to be that rude.
Oh, good,
he remarked as he stepped over a paint can, then plopped down in a chair across from me. He didn't bother removing the tarp.
You really are here.
Not yet fully caffeinated. That would be overstating. I dabbed at the last of the coffee-stained papers. Something about a new fire ordinance in effect for the upcoming celebratory displays. After the fire at the Monte Carlo, we'd had one heck of a time getting the county to, once again, allow fireworks from the rooftops. Xavier steepled his fingers as he pressed them to his lips.
What's the other guy look like?
What? I tossed the rag in a box that served as my trash bin. When he lowered his hands, I could see his smile.
That's quite a shiner you've got. I hope you gave as good as you got.
Have you ever known me not to? I raised a finger, putting him on mute for a moment, and grabbed my now empty mug. My body squealed in protest as I pushed myself to my feet, but I ignored it. I'll be right back. You want some? He shook his head.
I've already had enough to throw a lesser man into AFib.
No worries. I passed my last CPR course with flying colors on the third try. I only broke a few ribs on the dummy. After refilling my cup and getting reestablished behind my desk, I took a sip, bracing myself to dive into the day. Okay, what's got your knickers in a twist this morning?
You know how we carefully count and report all the major explosives we have.
He paused. I guess he expected a response.
Yep. And you know how we're supposed to report anything that's missing?
Again, a pause.
Yep. Like, to the ATF?
This time I didn't wait for the prompt. I'm a quick study. Yep, can we get to the point?
Some big stuff has gone missing.
I set my mug down.
What? I need to show you.
The sun was just high enough to bathe the rooftop in light, which was a good thing. Normally, a minefield of knee knockers, pipes, and electrical boxes, rooftop navigation was much less perilous in the daylight, especially now with all the mortar racks and wires as we busily prepared for the fireworks display tonight. Each individual tube would launch an aerial shell, some of them almost 2 feet in diameter, with precisely timed fuses. This year, the whole thing would be choreographed to the current hit by the sewer rats, the latest new hot thing, and our entertainment option for the weekend. Xavier's team of experts scurried, mounting shells, running wires, testing fuses. Precisely timed, intricately planned, tested, then retested, the show would be controlled from an electrical console that looked like the cockpit of a 747. Loudspeakers mounted on stalks behind the command center would pipe the music in so the operators could check the display timing. As I looked at the whole setup, all I could think of was, if God had a sense of humor, all she had to do was get a wild hair and rain on my parade. Precip wasn't in the forecast, but this being July, a rogue monsoonal flow could strike at any time. Woefully inadequate in the weather control department, I abdicated responsibility for the weather. Simple, mundane human problems were proving to be taxing enough as it was. On the far side of the roof, an empty electrical shed had been converted into a secure housing for the pyrotechnics. The door hung on one hinge. The latch, with the lock still through it, was bent and mangled. Bracing my hands on my hips and squinting my eyes against the assault of the summer sun, I surveyed the damage. "You didn't touch anything, did you?" Xavier stood at my shoulder. "No, just poked my head inside." "And the police and the ATF? Are they on their way?"
"Not yet."
Closing one eye, I tried to get a bead on him. "Why not?"
"We have a bit of a problem."
He shifted from one foot to the other as he avoided my eyes.
"Lay it out. How big?" "Class A."
He ducked through the doorway and motioned me to follow. I knelt next to him in the far corner. "You guys had Class A explosives up here?
What the hell were you thinking?" "The dynamite wasn't ours. I didn't even know the sticks were there until they were gone."
My voice stepped back from the edge of hysteria.
"Dynamite? Old stuff, too."
Xavier pointed to several dark spots on the concrete floor.
"The nitro's leaking out pretty good."
"If you didn't know they were there, how'd you know they were gone?"
"One of my guys told me, and I thought about you being up close and personal with some similar stuff. Too much to be a coincidence."
Xavier grabbed my arm and leaned in.
"Find Frenchie Nixon. He'll rabbit once the feds start sniffing around."
"Frenchie Nixon?" My voice rose an octave or two.
"You hired that klepto?"
My bang man shrugged.
"When it comes to rigging, he's the best in the business. Besides, he paid his debt to society. How was I to know he'd pinch some bang sticks and store them here?"
Some days, it just didn't pay to be alive. Today was shaping up to be one of them. I'd left Xavier to handle Romeo and the ATF guys, which wasn't all that nice considering the bang man had given me a head start. Frenchie Nixon. Under normal circumstances, that slime ball was someone I'd rather see through a long-range scope mounted on a rifle with my finger on the trigger and no witnesses. You see, Frenchie has a problem. He likes to steal stuff. Our paths had crossed when I'd been head of housekeeping at one of the big boss's first properties downtown. Frenchie had been on the engineering staff. While he'd been a whiz at fixing stuff, he also had been really good at swiping it when we weren't looking. Televisions, radios, light fixtures, you name it. Even if it was nailed down or screwed into the studs in the wall, he'd take it. When he was caught, he had 3 or 4 huge storage units full of the stuff. And that was the real curious thing. He didn't take it to sell it. No, he took it just to have it. But I knew he wasn't above unloading it when the heat was on. And sitting on a cache of Class A explosives had to be a hot seat, especially in this day and age where folks saw terrorists under every rock. I'd just bet Frenchie was sweating bullets. In fact,
I was banking on it. Dean caught me striding across the lobby.
You have that look in your eye.
He fell into step beside me. You mean bordering on the brink of homicide? He shot me a grin that lit his eyes.
Care to elaborate?
If you want to join me, I'll fill you in on the way.
Not fair. You know I can't resist an invitation to a future crime.
The Ferrari was waiting at the curb, engine running, top down. The valet wiped away a drop of drool as he grinned and opened the driver's side door for me with a flourish. Men used to drool over me. Now it was my car. I tried not to be bothered by that. Of course, I was well beyond wanting to turn the heads of 19-year-olds. At least that's what I told myself. With several axes to grind, I stomped on the accelerator and squealed down the drive, then turned north on the strip. Dane had a white-knuckled grip on the handhold.
Feel better?
Not yet. I took a left on Sahara and tried not to look at the shuttered hotel by the same name. I guessed there were heydays for each of the properties, but I hated it when one had run its course and was relegated to a memory. Wheeling onto the north on-ramp to the 15, I let the horses run, savoring the hit of speed-induced adrenaline.
If you weren't such an awesome gal, I'd still be tempted to hang with you just for your Italian iron.
I shot him a narrowed-eyed look. This is probably not the time to jerk my chain.
It's the only time. You're unarmed.
Shielding my bruised ribs, I fought the laugh burbling up inside me. Losing the fight, I winced in anticipatory pain, but relished the joy. Life. A constant struggle to find the balance between happy and sad, good and bad. But heck, if it was easy, everybody would do it.
You wanna tell me where we're going?
Payless Pawn Shop. Dane swiveled to look at me.
Payless? Why would anyone take their junk to a place that advertises they pay less?
I'm guessing that, in an attempt to appeal to the retail side, they didn't consider the wholesale side. These guys aren't rocket scientists. The wind whistled past us, bringing tears to my eyes. The engine behind my shoulders growled and vibrated, resonating through me. I smiled because I couldn't help myself.
And why are we going to a pawn shop?
Dane still clutched the handhold, but he looked a bit more relaxed. I'm looking to score some dynamite. Chapter 4
Today is shaping up to be a real blast.
Dane flashed me with a smile. If you can't do better than that, I'll...
What?
His grin held a challenge. I just smiled as I floored the accelerator, pressing us both back in our seats as we flew through the mousetrap, staying to the left and onto the 515, which would take us to the east side of town. The Boulder Highway used to be the heavily trafficked main drag between Sin City and Boulder City, home to the Hoover Dam. Now the 515 bypass to the east and the 215 to the south siphoned the traffic and the prosperity with it, relegating the Boulder Highway to has-been status. Home to smaller local casinos, gun stores, dives, hotels that apparently took pride in their low hourly rates, and pawn shops. The whole area clung to the tattered memory of bygone riches, its hopes fading along with the aging colored awnings bleached by the assault of the sun. That's not to say hope was completely gone. There were pockets of economic revitalization along this long stretch of asphalt. However, hunkered between a flop house and bar called Balls to the Wall, which advertised in blinking neon an all-nude review, Payless Pawns wasn't in one of the sections on the upswing. I eased the Ferrari into a tight space next to a couple of motorcycles. The skull and crossbones insignias did little to inspire confidence. Today would have been a good day to stuff my Glock in my Birkin. I smiled at the incongruity. The Hermes hit woman. It had a ring to it. A career possibility if this casino exec thing went down the slop chute. And just one more way to shoot myself in the foot. Biting down on my weakness for puniness, I tried to channel tough as I filed the idea away. I may have missed the boat on the gun, but I'd brought the next best thing. Dane. He unfolded himself from the car, then looked down at me as he eased the door shut with an appropriate reverence.
You always introduce me to the nicest places. First, Smokin' Joe's and his Triple X videos. Then your mother and her girls. Now the balls to the wall, which, come to think of it...
I burst out laughing. He tried to ignore me.
If I didn't know better, I'd think you were trying to soften me up.
His grin flared as he realized the setup he had just handed me on a platter. He held up both hands.
Don't go there.
Then he dropped his head when I said, if that was my goal, I'd say my choices were a bit misguided, wouldn't you? Following his lead, I too unfolded myself, then shut the door behind me. Putting the top up would be asking for someone to slit it, so I didn't bother. After all, you guys have the hard part. Looking up, he shot me a grin.
Do you ever do as you're asked?
I have authority issues. Deal with it.
I'm trying.
He squinted an eye shut as he glanced around.
I can't decide whether to come inside to protect you or stay out here and protect the car.
The car, for sure. Somehow, I kept the grin off my face and out of my voice. You'll get more pleasure out of it in the long run.
Probably true.
His lust thinly disguised, his eyes raked the car, then returned to mine.
Seriously, how do you want to play this?
Give me 5 minutes. I'll go in alone. Frenchie Nixon's sister owns this place. Last I heard, Frenchie still runs home when he finds his ass in a crack, and this is all the family he's got.
I won't even ask what you want with someone named Frenchie. I hope I get points for that.
His eyes flicked over my shoulder, a habit of my ever-watchful former Army MP.
And after 5 minutes?
You'll get to do your whole Texas chivalry saving damsels in distress thing.
I'm a little rusty.
He didn't like the idea, I could see that. But he always was good about letting me hang myself. A knight in rusty armor. Now you tell me. I pressed my nose to the storefront window, but couldn't see anything through cracks in the mirrored film. 4 latches, each with a heavy-duty padlock hanging from it, had been opened and folded back from the door. 4? The necessity that required all the locks, plus the bars on the windows, did little to inspire confidence. I took a steadying breath and hoped my black eye gave me a hint of badass. With more bravado than I felt, I threw my shoulders back and pushed through the single glass door. A bell dinged somewhere in the dark recesses. After the bright sunlight, the interior murkiness was impenetrable. As the door closed behind me, shutting out the sun, I paused, allowing my eyes to adjust. Only 3 of the canned lights in the ceiling had working bulbs, which cast thin, milky light. Smoke and the acrid tang of desperation hung in the air. Finally, light filtered in and images hit my retinas. Musical instruments hung from the ceiling. A nice maroon Harley Springer Softail sat in the middle of the floor. A knight in full armor kept watch in the corner. Power tools hung from hooks forming an intricate pattern against peeling puke-green paint on the walls. A phalanx of bicycles stood in rows to my left. High in each corner, video cameras, their red recording lights, staring like gargoyles' eyes, captured my every move. Glass cases filled with the high-end stuff formed a barrier in front of the back wall, protecting the lone entrance to a section marked private. Snippets of a laugh track from some television show filtered through the closed door. Hello? My voice, not exactly as strong as I wanted, was swallowed in the depths. I cleared my throat and tried again. Anybody home? This time, the swinging door moved inward a few inches, just far enough to allow a side-by-side barrel to poke through. The business end pointed at my chest.
Go away!
I recognized the voice, husky from decades of unfiltered camels. Gracie, you know why I'm here.
I ain't here.
Then he ain't far. I tried to look mean as I stared into the dark, evil holes of the shotgun. He's probably next door drinking himself into the next life, but I know when he's in a heap of trouble, he hides in your skirts, and this time, Frenchie's brought trouble with a capital T to your doorstep. She lowered the gun and eased through the door. After breaking the gun, she held it over her forearm. The shells didn't eject, so she could slap the thing closed and be locked and loaded in a jiffy. Not a happy thought, being on the receiving end and all. A tough woman forged in the fire of a hard life. Gracie was small and thin, to the point of painful, with gray hair that hung in greasy waves down past her shoulders. Her face, long with hollowed cheeks, held deep-set, lifeless eyes, and the slash of a mouth defined by thin lips. A few faded tattoos decorated her creped skin beneath the short, tattered sleeves of her white shirt, now yellowed with age.
I know his story. What's yours?
Your brother pinched some dynamite. I need it. And it would go a long way toward lowering the heat if he could tell me where he got it. I can tell you that, after a good grilling, the ATF guys will want to fry his ass. Probably yours, too, I bluffed. I need something to douse the flame.
He don't have no dynamite. He's just got himself a blistering headache. Nothing's put a dent in it. I'm thinking maybe he's got a tumor or something.
Or a nitro headache. She shook her head.
Yeah, that boy ain't smart enough to hide from hillbillies. No way he'd have thought to use rubber gloves when handling.
Her eyes grew wide when she realized what she had said. Finally, after a moment of vacillation during which I held my breath, her face fell, laying bare the soft spot she had for her brother. I went in for the kill. They'll throw him down a hole, Gracie, then bury him.
Hell, his ass is a grape anyway. Might as well talk to you, can't hurt him none. That boy's gone and done it now.
She fingered a cross hanging from a gold chain around her neck.
He means well. Know what I mean?
Unclear as to how his proclivity for the 10-finger discount supported that statement, I said nothing. She stopped fiddling and slapped me with a stern look.
Ye can help him?
I'm the only friend in his corner. I'll do what I can, but he's got to help himself first. With one quick jerk, she flipped the shotgun closed. For a fraction of a second, I thought she'd use it on me. Instead, she leaned it against the wall. As she ran her finger around the barrel holes, she thought for a moment. Then she gave me a half-grin that lifted one corner of her lips, exposing stained teeth.
Pretty tough, aren't you? You didn't flinch.
Then she turned and shouted over her shoulder.
Frenchie! Get your ass out here!
I thought about telling her there was a fine line between tough and stupid, but I didn't want to undermine my illusion of badass. It might still come in handy. Just as Frenchie pushed through the back door, biting off the corner of a Pop-Tart, Dane walked in through the front, letting squint-inducing sunlight in with him. Apparently, Dane was a bit more clever than I gave him credit for, as he took stock of the situation with one glance. Then, he pretended not to know me as he sauntered over to the Harley. Gracie stepped around the counter to help him, leaving me alone with her brother. An androgynous carbon copy of his sister, Frenchie, sported the same painful thinness, the same long stringy hair, the same tats. But instead of Gracie's closed, wary look, Frenchie's face was open,
approachable, childlike in a way. And while his sister decorated herself with a shotgun, Frenchy wore a simple tool belt slung low on his hips with screwdrivers, vice grips, and wrenches hanging from the loops, ready to fix or filch.
"Hi, Miss Otto."
His eyes, clear and blue, met mine. If he was scared, he had me fooled.
"You want to sit? Looks like life slapped you around a bit."
With one hand, he lifted a stool from behind the counter and handed it to me as he bit off another bite of the Pop-Tart, which looked like a strawberry one. My stomach growled. I'm a slave to the siren call of food. Grateful, I shot him a smile as I took a load off. Behind me, Dane peppered Gracie with questions about the motorcycle, keeping her occupied.
"Heard you got a bit of a headache."
His expression turned quizzical.
"Yeah, a real pounder. Been popping aspirin like it's Blue Bennies, you know?"
Thankfully, I didn't know, and I didn't think it mattered. "Caffeine."
"No shit."
He looked doubtful. "Caffeine is a vasoconstrictor. It counteracts the dilating effects of the nitro."
"Well, I be damned."
Frenchy set the remaining bit of his pastry on the filthy counter, making me cringe, then turned to push through the door to the back.
"Hang on a sec. We got a fresh pot on the burner. Want some?"
I shook my head. When he returned with both hands gripping the mug as if it were a lifeline, I started in again. "Tell me about the dynamite. Short and sweet, okay?"
"May and Flay were womping around the desert north of here, after 9 to 5, messing in some of the old mines and stuff."
Flea was the leader of the motorcycle gang that had taken Frenchy in, probably as a pet or mascot. He didn't have enough macho to scare anyone, so what use would he be to the gang? I had no idea. Amusement? I looked at him as he snagged the remaining bit of Pop-Tart, polished it off, then licked his fingers one at a time. If he was their amusement, they were desperate.
"We found a crate of the sticks in one of them,"
Frenchy continued, after swallowing, wiping his hands on his jeans. "Anything else?" He gave me a quizzical look.
Nothing of any value."
"Why don't you let me be the judge of that? One man's trash, another man's treasure." I glanced around the pawn shop. "You should know that better than anybody."
"Okay. There were some old clocks. You know, those wind-up things that you can't even get rid of at the flea market."
I nodded. "Anything else?"
"Some little tubes filled with some silver liquid, blasting caps, an old briefcase with some papers in it, nothing important."
"What did the papers say?" Frenchy shrugged.
"Impossible to tell. They'd pretty much fallen apart."
"So all of this was pretty old stuff?"
"Yeah. The dynamite was leaking like a sieve."
He snorted.
"Not worth much. I thought I'd scored big when this suit offered me a couple of C-notes for 3 sticks.
3?
"Yeah. The guy was a nutcase, all twitchy-like. And stupid. Those sticks didn't have much pop left in them. Hell, half the nitro had soaked into the wood."
My heart fell. 3. I knew what had happened to 2. It was anybody's guess where the 3rd one would turn up. "Oh, those sticks still delivered." Frenchy's eyes widened.
"No shit!"
Pretty much leveled Jimmy G's place. Frenchy blinked rapidly as he tried to absorb that.
"Anybody hurt?"
"Only me." He backed up a step.
"Shit. I'm sorry, man. I thought I was selling that dude a dud, know what I mean?"
Wrapping himself in a hug, he started shaking.
"I never thought..."
"The guy you sold the stuff to? Have you seen him around before?"
"No. He had that out-of-town look to him. 3-piece suit, 5-bill shoes."
"Can you describe him?" Frenchie stopped shaking as his eyebrows snapped into a thoughtful frown.
A thin white guy, tallish like ye. Dark hair, mane eyes, and always looking down his nose, talking down like I'm trash, you know?
Frenchie's eyes met mine.
I didn't like that, so I charged him double what I would have took. Fool paid it.
A man on a mission. I eased off the stool. How old?
Like ye.
I didn't want to ask him what age he thought that might be. I'd established the guy wasn't 70, so he wasn't boogie. How'd he find you?
It was right away, you know. He was out on the highway, going for a drive, he said. He flagged us down when he saw us coming out of the mine.
Really? What'd he say?
He said some of his folks way back when had been miners in the area. He wanted to know if we'd found anything. We'd already stashed the sticks on the far wheeler, so we didn't give out. We don't go giving without getting, you know? Besides, we didn't know this guy, and he looked like trouble. All mean and angry-like.
I see. I pursed my lips and tried not to act surprised. So how'd the same guy end up with the sticks? You're sure he was the same guy?
I'm getting to that part.
Frenchie nervously picked at a scab on his arm.
Here's the creepy part. The guy shows up later that day at the shop, looking for me.
The shop? You mean here? At Frenchie's nod, I asked, how'd he know your name and where you worked?
He said he read it off my work shirt I had on when we met him on the highway. The shirt with my name on the front and the pawn shop info in big red letters on the back. My sister about shit when she heard I was wearing it out in the desert. Those things ain't cheap.
Apparently he didn't believe your story about not finding anything. Frenchie's eyes flicked to mine. Thankfully he stopped picking at that scab.
The guy flashed a wad and I got greedy. Told him what we had. His eyes really lit when he'd heard about the sticks. He wanted it then, but I didn't have it.
No, you'd conveniently stashed it on top of my hotel. I should break you in two for that. He paled, then hung his head with a sigh.
Probably should. Anyway, I had to get to work and it was convenient. With all the other stuff up there, I didn't think anyone would notice. I agreed to meet the guy the next day, yesterday morning, to complete the sale. The rest is history.
Did he take anything else?
Couple of clocks and the liquid things. I gave it all to him in the briefcase.
Frenchie rubbed his arms as if he was suddenly chilled.
Funny thing, no. The guy, the way he looked at me after we did the transaction, you know. It gave me a real bad feeling.
Yeah, unfortunately, I did know. If the guy had anything to do with Boogie Fleischman, then Frenchie and Flea were lucky they had run into him out in the open, on a well-traveled highway and again in a public place. Look, I'll do my best to lower the heat on you, but I need you to do a few things in return.
Just say the word.
I need all the dynamite you've got left, and then I want you and your friends to try to track down the dude you sold the stuff to. If you find him, don't kill him. Bring him to me. Promise me.
You got my word.
He banged his chest with a closed fist. Some sort of secret salute or something, I figured. I thought he might break a rib. Then he pushed through the doorway to the back. A few moments later, he returned with a weathered wooden crate, which he thrust at me.
This is all of it.
Carefully, I grabbed it and looked inside. The wooden box held 9 sticks, paper tubes, really, each oozing a dark, gooey substance. Old and unstable. Great. I gave Frenchie the sternest look I could muster. This is serious shit. You swear this is all there is? Your friend Flea, he didn't take any? He shook his head.
Swear!
And there's no more of this stuff on top of my hotel?
Promise!
Dane and Gracie's conversation was winding down behind me. I felt sure that, after we left, she'd have to wipe his drool off the bike. Why'd you break the lock on the shed?
Work was crazy. By the time we knocked off, someone had buttoned up the joint. I broke the lock and took my property. When I was off sight and out of reach, I called Xavier.
You don't happen to know anything about the guy who bought the stuff, besides what he looks like, do you? Like his name, where he's from, what kind of car he was driving?
Don't know any of the particulars, but he was sporting a hot piece of iron, just like the one you got out there.
Frenchie nodded toward the parking lot out front. It was my turn to be surprised.
A Ferrari? Yeah. Local plates. And a Babylon emblem.
You mean he was driving one of our Ferraris?
Did you just offer that woman a night with me in exchange for the Harley?
Dane asked me as I carefully lowered the crate into the space behind the seats. We both settled into the car and belted up. I punched the start button and the engine growled to life. I wanted to know what it would be like on the other end of that kind of transaction for once. I grinned at him with more humor than I felt. I almost had a deal, too.
You think you're cute, don't you?
Dane tried to act angry, but he couldn't pull it off. No, just having fun at someone else's expense. Not a particularly proud moment. I eased the Ferrari into traffic, this time at a much more sedate pace. You wouldn't happen to know anything about the decomposition of dynamite, would you?
You were serious? You weren't just jerking my chain when I asked why we were headed to a cheap shop on the wrong side of town?
Dane's eyes widened, letting in a bit of light, apparently.
Don't tell me that's what's in the box.
Keeping my eyes on the road, I nodded. Besides, I didn't have to look at him to know he rolled his eyes and then glowered at me. He unfastened himself and squirmed around to take a look. Then he repositioned himself.
You've got a big problem.
I have many. Could you be more specific?
That's really old stuff. Probably made sometime in the late 50s, early 60s, before they switched to ammonium nitrate.
I know that much, I said in my brave voice. And all those westerns I watched as a kid, where they blew everything to Kingdom Come with the stuff. And that bit about one jolt setting it off, that was Hollywood, right? I accelerated onto the 515.
Not really. This stuff is prone to unplanned explosions.
Dean's voice got all quiet and serious.
I've heard of this stuff blowing when the sun hit it.
One glance told me he was serious. Careful to avoid any jarring, I quickly downshifted, decelerating to make the next exit, Flamingo Road. Change in plans. Call the ATF. Have them meet us in the parking lot at Sam Boyd Stadium. If we blow, I don't want to take anyone else with us.
If we go,
Dane said as he grabbed his cell and started dialing,
it'd be a real waste. This car is a work of art.
Dane and I had just circled the wagons in the vast lots surrounding the stadium at a point that I thought was the furthest from human life, when the bomb squad rolled in, sirens blazing. I let Dane give them the skinny as I found a curb to sit on, well away from the car. The fact that we were very close to the site of a rocket fuel plant that had exploded, leveling a huge area of Henderson surrounding it, was sort of ironic. I hoped it wasn't an omen. I grabbed my phone and began making calls. The day had expired, but thankfully no one else had. Defusing the nitro situation had taken far longer than I had imagined. Of course, not only did we have Metro to deal with, we also had the feds. Despite the widely held opinion that most branches of the government were masters at making big goddammits out of hangnails, the ATF was anything but. they dealt with serious shit, and a bomb really lit their fuse. Using a crane, they had lifted the box of dynamite, then burned it in a far corner of the parking lot, far away from humans. The whole thing would have been fun to watch, except one missing stick of volatile dynamite kept my feet to the fire, prodding me to action. Time was slipping away. Firmly in the clutches of nightfall, Dane and I motored back to the Babylon. With no threat of immediate immolation, I once again let the horses run. This time, Dane didn't feel the need to hang on. Tonight, the lights of the Strip didn't hold their normal magic for me. Instead, they reminded me how hard it would be to find a dynamite needle in this huge haystack. Clearly, I needed to narrow my search. Bert, my Ferrari man, was waiting for me in the dealership when I returned the car.
Lucky, I'm sorry I wasn't here when you called. I'm working the late shift tonight. In fact, I just punched in. When I'm off, I turn the cell off. I work hard, but they don't own me.
Clearly, I'm not as adept as you at establishing boundaries. I admired a new shiny red car turning on the dais under a lone spotlight. The new California?
Sweet machine. You'd look fine wearing one.
Nice try. I wandered over to the car, running my finger down the hood as I admired the new lines. A compact departure from the normal Ferrari. Did they tell you what I wanted?
Yeah, something about the name of a guy who had one of our cars yesterday.
He pulled a white envelope out of his back pocket and extended it to me.
We had 6 cars out, all rented by males. I pulled the list for you.
The list was short. Names and addresses, not much else. This really doesn't help. I bit my lip as I looked inside the California and tried to think. I need some way of narrowing the list down.
Tell me what you know.
I gave him Frenchie's description of the dynamite buyer. Bert blew out some air.
I could ask around, see who might have rented a car to a guy looking like that, but it could take a while.
Time isn't something I have a lot of. I hoped he didn't ask me why. I didn't want to elaborate. Nothing like a potential explosion to create a panic. And I didn't want to lie.
You don't happen to know where the car went, do you?
I stopped ogling the California, turning my attention to Bert.
I have an address. Why? Give it to me.
Bert didn't wait. Instead, he stepped behind the counter and logged into the store computer as his mouth kept motoring.
I don't need to tell you how much dough we've got tied up in these cars. If one went missing, well, insurance would give us a huge hassle. It would be better to recover the car.
He looked up at me expectantly, a twinkle in his eye.
So we put GPS trackers in all of them.
I punched up Jimmy G's place on my phone, highlighted the address, then handed it to Bert. Try this one first. I have another route he took, out the 95, toward Tonopah.
We'll overlay the address with the tracking system.
He bent his head in concentration. On the theory that the whole watched pot, not boiling thing was true, I resisted leaning over his shoulder as he worked. Instead, I turned my back. Putting my elbows on the counter behind me, I surveyed all the toys in the dealership. Nervous glances at the clock on the far wall marked the glacial passage of time. 10 minutes had passed, and my nerves were jumping when Bert said,
Bingo!
I whirled around in time to see him circle a name on his list.
Here's the guy.
Albert Campos. Does he still have the car? Can we see where he is now? Bert checked his records.
No, he turned the car back in yesterday.
I knew that was asking too much. Anything you can tell me? Bert fell to work once again, his fingers flying over the keyboard. When he stopped, his eyes widened.
What?
He turned the monitor to face me. I leaned in to read where he pointed. I read it twice, then looked up.
You sure? Yep,
Bert said.
your Mr. Campos was personally recommended by the big boss.
Still reeling, my life on tilt, I paused in the lobby trying to regain balance by absorbing some of the normal flow of nightlife in Vegas. Social creatures being primarily nocturnal, nightfall heralded an increase in activity. Tonight was no exception. Couples and herds of momentarily unattached hipsters spiffed for the evening in their $500 jeans with holes in them, gathered in clusters or strolled. $500 for something I used to make with a pair of Wranglers, a shotgun, and a washing machine. Casual observers eyeing potential attachments, or the already attached, clutching each other in a show of ownership, they all not only partook of the magic of the Babylon, but helped create our aura of coolness as well. A perfectly symbiotic relationship. And it seemed to be working. Except for one strident note. Several teams of beefy guys checking every nook and cranny caught my eye, dispelling some of my elixir of self-satisfaction. They were so inconspicuous in their tight T-shirts with ATF printed in 6-inch letters across the back and holding onto their bomb-sniffing German shepherds. It wasn't going to be pretty once the big boss got wind of it, but there wasn't much I could do. Self-preservation dictated a flak jacket, but Kevlar just wasn't part of my fashion-forward style. Thankfully, nobody seemed too alarmed, if they even noticed the sniffers at all. One bullet dodged. Registration was not particularly crowded. Most folks coming in town for the 4th already had arrived. Stepping to the counter, I caught the eye of Sergio Fabiano, our front desk manager, and motioned him over. A trim man, dark and swarthy, with chiseled features and a body like those immortalized in marble by ancient Italian sculptors. Sergio attracted female attention wherever he went. If he considered it a burden, he shouldered it well. His dark hair, long and straight, obviously tickled his eyes as he kept flipping it, a habit I found a bit irritating. After finishing with the couple he had been dealing with, he moved down the counter, stopping in front of me.
Miss O'Toole, how are you this evening?
His brows creased into a slight frown.
A raw steak or cold cucumber will help that eye.
Thanks, but I'm a moving target. Ducking and weaving, no time for home remedies. But you can help me with something else.
Your wish.
He shot me a grin. How I wished it was infectious. Do we have a guest by the name of Albert Campos registered here this weekend?
One moment.
He bent his head and began scrolling through screens in the hotel reservation system. He pursed his lips as he worked. Before he looked up, I knew the answer.
It doesn't appear there is an Albert Campos staying with us. I'm sorry.
Not nearly as sorry as I am. I tapped the counter as I let my eyes wander over the crowd's reflection in the large mirrors behind the desk. Thanks anyway.
By the way, I love your song.
Sergio clasped his hands, his eyes bright.
So romantic.
My eyes snapped back to his. What?
Lucky for me. Teddy is so talented. I never knew.
My employee gave me a warm look.
And he must love you so. You're a lucky woman, Miss O'Toole.
How do you know about that song? Sergio looked at me like I'd crawled out from under a rock, which apparently wasn't far from the truth.
Honey, everybody knows about that song. Teddy's been on every talk show in the Western Hemisphere. The world does love a love story. That tune is riding up at the charts with a bullet.
A bullet? I could think of one tight-ass little songbird I'd like to shoot with that bullet. Sergio's smile faded when his eyes met mine.
This song is not a good thing?
Nothing I hate more than a private drama on a public stage. Flash's call caught me standing in the middle of the lobby, unsure who to kill first.
I hope you got something.
Hell, I wouldn't be calling if I didn't.
Flash didn't sound all that happy.
But don't get all woozy on me. I'm still just tickling leads. I've got a bunch of rumors, but nothing solid yet.
Give me what you got. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath, squelching homicidal urges. Sticking one finger in my open ear, I pressed the phone tightly to the other, focusing on her voice. The noise of the lobby faded away. Too bad this silence amplified the hurt in my heart and the noise in my head.
Well, I went back through all the police reports surrounding the first bombing at Jimmy G's.
How'd you get those?
One of the detectives I used to hook up with back when I was young and stupid. I knew some stuff, so I did what I always do, blackmail.
Nice.
Some guys just got it coming, know what I mean?
My eyes flew open.
You! We're the one banging Crayfish Kreider!
My voice was louder than I intended. When I saw some people look my direction, I tried to modulate myself, but I lack a revulsion squelch knob.
Why didn't you tell me he was into cock stuffing? What the hell is that anyway?
Now I had the attention of most of the folks in the lobby. I headed toward the casino, seeking privacy under the cover of noise. Flash didn't say anything for a moment.
How'd you know about that?
She actually sounded pained. A first. Serendipity.
It's not common knowledge. So don't go Googling harakiri. Hell, I wouldn't go sticking a blade in my stomach, but if Kreider is crowing about private matters, I'd be more than happy to start carving off some of his parts.
There wasn't even a hint of shame in her voice. I needed some of that, Moxie.
More on that later. Don't think I'm letting you off without getting the whole story. But back to the police reports.
You were going to tell me something?
Right.
She picked up steam again.
Anyway, two interesting tidbits. All the way to the slammer, Boogie claimed he was set up, that he didn't place that bomb.
The timing was a bit off, really, I thought back. The stuff between the union and the holdouts had sorted itself out by then.
Exactly, Flash agreed. And if you think about it, with his rep, Boogie was the perfect scapegoat.
I ducked into a far corner of the casino, hopefully away from eavesdroppers. Convicted because everyone knew he was guilty of something, maybe not the bombing at hand.
Okay, assuming that's true, who planted the original bomb? That's where the trail goes cold. Boogie turned into a clam. Just from reading the reports, I got the feeling he was taking the fall for someone.
Who?
Silence.
Okay. I filed it away as something to hit the big boss over the head with. Either him or Jimmy. One of them had to know.
Anything else? Yeah. It's about your father. And it supports Boogie's position.
Really? How so?
Your father told the police he got a call as he was on his way to the restaurant to meet you and your mother. Someone claiming they worked at the hotel. He didn't say which property, but I can get that for you. Called and said he was needed, that there was an emergency. He said he knew the person who called by name, but would not have recognized the voice.
So he was deliberately called off? To be honest, I was glad to hear that. It was far better than being left with the thought he stood us up. I don't know why it mattered after all this time, but it did.
That's what he told the police.
Was there really an emergency?
Not one that hit the papers.
And it was a woman who called him?
Ah, you were listening.
Flash laughed, her voice returning to her normal bantering tone.
What do you think?
I think it's time to have a father-daughter chat. My mood was heading south. The wound in my forehead started to throb when the private elevator deposited me in the middle of the big boss's living room. A huge expanse of hardwood floors, leather-covered walls, hand-knotted silk rugs, and furniture fashioned with exotic woods and the hides of African animals, this apartment had been the closest thing I had to a place I called home, except for a whorehouse in Pahrump called Mona's, which really didn't count. The big boss and I had broken bread countless times, with me none the wiser at the secret he kept. He hadn't told me he was my father until recently, when he thought he might die. Apparently, the man was pretty adept at harboring secrets. With the overhead lights off, the only light to hold back the darkness shone from the pinpoint lights illuminating the artwork on the walls, lesser works by the Grand Masters, and the lights of the strip filtering in through the wall of floor-to-ceiling windows. A figure silhouetted against the window turned as I strode further into the room. Not the big boss. Mona.
Lucky!
Worry nagged at the edges of her voice.
Just the person I wanted to see.
I hurried toward her, propelled by the worry in her tone.
Mother, are you okay?
She motioned to a small side table.
I'm trying to read this note. I need your help.
I leaned over it and squinted in the half-light. This has been burned.
I know that,
Mona sighed, as if barely able to shoulder the burden of having a stupid child.
That's why I'm having trouble reading it.
Where did you get it? I kept my voice even. Mona was not going to get under my skin. Not today, anyway. I needed to focus.
I found it smoldering in that movable fire pit thing your father has.
When she looked at me, her eyes had that deer-caught-in-the-headlight look to them.
I think it's the note he got the other day.
Really? This time I looked at it more closely. The sheet was almost intact. Only one corner was missing. Bring me a spray bottle, some water, and some glycerin.
Glycerin?
Mona tried to frown, but her brows wouldn't move. Check the medicine cabinet. A lot of treatments for constipation use glycerin. Maybe we'll get lucky. Without a further question, she charged off across the room.
If the big boss gets wind of this, our collective asses are grapes,
I called after her, knowing she'd ignore my feeble attempt at humor. At least I amused myself.
I'm not really worried about that right now,
Mona said, as she disappeared into the hallway leading to the private rooms.
Besides, that man is putty in my hands.
She tossed off the line with bravado that had a hollow ring to it. Mother never did have a firm grip on reality, but now was not the time to point it out. Besides, she'd just argue. I tried to make out the writing as I waited, but it just looked like dark squiggles, tightly woven on the crinkled paper. Amazingly, Mona was back in a flash and with the items I'd requested.
What are you going to do with this stuff?
I busied myself combining the water and glycerin in the spray bottle, then tightening the cap. As I shook it to combine the contents, at least briefly, water and oil weren't known to stick together long, I glanced at her. You know all those notes from admirers you used to burn in that barrel behind the house? Mona gave me a narrow-eyed look.
You didn't.
It was Miranda's idea, actually. Miranda, once my closest friend, had gone on to a stellar porn career and now made boatloads by producing the trash. Just thinking about it made me sad. We were just kids. It was something she saw on that TV show, MacGyver. We tried it. It worked. Mona stepped back as I began spraying the paper with the mixture.
And you've been using it ever since.
I'm a woman of many talents. After wetting the ashes, I carefully tried to smooth out the paper. In theory, the water made it easier to flatten, and the oil held it together. Turn on that lamp, I nodded my head toward a reading lamp bending over the back of the couch. Mona scurried to do as I asked, then stepped out of the way. Carefully, I eased the now flat paper off the table, holding it up. Amazingly, it stayed together. Holding it up to the light, I worked to make out the writing. The ink or pencil lead, whichever, was not soluble, so it would stay dark. Unfortunately, I could only make out a few words. "It looks like a name," I said, thinking out loud. "What is it?" Chewing my lip, I narrowed my eyes and concentrated through the headache pain. "Eugenia, I think." I rested my eyes, then looked again. "Yes, Eugenia. Eugenia somebody. I can't read the last name. And something about a..." I lowered the paper and looked at Mona. She paled and sank to the couch, a hand clutched to her chest. "Oh, my!" Alarmed, I paused in my reading. It took a direct hit to rock Mona back on her heels. "Are you okay?" She nodded, then appeared to regain composure.
"Keep reading. Something about a what?"
"A child."
"A child?"
Mona whispered, her face ashen as she sunk further into the couch. I lowered the paper and sat next to her. "What is it?" I grabbed her hand. It was cold and clammy. With a trembling hand, she brushed at a tendril of hair that had escaped, and now tickled her eyes.
"I need to talk to your father."
"Okay." Unable to think of anything that would help, I patted her hand. "Where is he?" When she looked at me, she didn't try to hide the fear in her eyes.
"That's the problem. Your father has disappeared."
Chapter 5. Back in my office, I rallied the troops. Miss P., Romeo, Flash, Brandy, and Dane perched expectantly on the meager furnishings, all of us gathered around Mona. Jimmy G. leaned against the wall in the corner. "Where's Jeremy?" I directed the question at Miss P.
"On his way."
"He said he had to pick up a package first." The question quieted the group. Jerry, our head of security, poked his head in through the makeshift doorway, then stepped inside. He took the other arm on the chair holding Dane. At my glance, he shook his head.
"The big boss is not on the property."
"His cars?"
"He took Matilda."
Matilda was his beloved fire engine red Bentley. I started to tell Romeo to put out an all-points bulletin, but the kid was a step ahead, speaking quietly into his phone. I glanced around the group. Everyone waited expectantly. Even Mona sat quietly, looking as worried as I felt.
"Okay."
Pressing my palms to the top of the desk, I leaned forward. "Mother, the floor is yours. Give us everything you know." She worried with the end of a peach scarf tied jauntily around her neck.
"Your father..."
Her eyes held mine, seeking comfort. I gave her a warm smile.
"He hasn't been himself since he got that letter. It dredged up a lot of very old memories. All the way back to when he was a young man on the town before he met me."
"Who was Eugenia?" A gasp of surprise escaped Jimmy, and Mona gave him a look I couldn't quite read.
"Eugenia Campos?" he whispered, like he was summoning a ghost.
Mona gave him a curt nod that had "shut up" as the subtext. Even I caught that.
"Eugenia Campos?" I asked anyway.
"That last name sure rings a bell."
"Let me continue,"
Mona said, not even trying to hide her exasperation.
"She was a cigarette girl at the International," Mona explained. "Young, beautiful, the complete package, the men used to say. And she had a nose for money."
And a knack for extortion, Jimmy G added, his voice flat and hard.
You knew her? I asked him.
We all passed her around.
His eyes skittered from mine. He looked uneasy as he stared at the floor.
Passed her around?
My voice was as cold as the meat locker in the basement. Finally, he took a deep breath. When his eyes met mine, they held.
Yeah, we each took our turn with her until she met your father.
I leaned back. Surveying the group, I couldn't shake the feeling I was about to learn something I didn't want to know.
And then? They coupled up pretty good.
Jimmy glanced at Mona. She delivered the punchline. Until he met me.
You broke them up? I asked.
Mona looked uncomfortable. Jimmy came to her rescue.
It wasn't like that. Your mother didn't really know. But once Albert caught sight of Mona, oh, he was done. There hasn't been anyone else for him since.
How did Eugenia take all of this?
Not well,
Mona said, eliciting a whistle from Jimmy G.
That's an understatement. She threw a holy shit fit.
Jimmy ignored Mona's pleading look and forged ahead.
Threatened all kinds of things. Made your father pretty hot under the collar, I can tell you that. He was just a punk starting out. She could have derailed him big time.
A cold dread bloomed in the pit of my stomach. I see. Did she happen to be pregnant?
Oh, she claimed she was. But it was an act of desperation. We all thought so.
So nobody believed her? I looked at both Mona and Jimmy G. They glanced at each other and shrugged. Sorta coincidental we're dealing with a bomber named Albert Campos, isn't it? And Albert? Interesting choice for a first name, don't you think?
That doesn't mean the big boss is his father, Jimmy pointed out.
No, but that's easy enough to prove, and it certainly indicates young Albert's mother thought so, or wanted us to think so anyway. What happened to Ms. Campos?
She left town, Jimmy stated.
Anybody know where she went? I glanced between the two of them. Did anyone hear from her after the fact? Silence. I fixed Mother with my best stare. I need an honest answer here.
Honey, believe me, I wish I could tell you someone did.
From the panic in her eyes, I could tell Mona and I were reading from the same page.
But as far as I know, she just disappeared.
There seems to be an epidemic of that going around, doesn't there? Jimmy gave me a lopsided grin.
Hey, it's Vegas.
I didn't think he was funny. All sound seemed to be chewed up in the grist mill of overactive imaginations, leaving an uncomfortable silence. Vegas lore was replete with stories of disappearances, of finding bleached bones in the desert decades later. What if the big boss...
No,
not possible. A cool draft, as if a ghost whispered in my ear, sent chills racing through me. I didn't like it. In fact, I didn't like any of this. Anybody have any ideas? Uncomfortable with my own thoughts, I threw out the question. Seven sets of eyes stared at me. No ideas. No plan. The big boss had disappeared, and his self-proclaimed son wandered Vegas with a stick of dynamite. The knowledge necessary to put it to use, and an axe to grind. Silence echoed, as I presumed we all pondered the imponderable. All heads turned as a raised voice, angry with a hint of fear, echoed in the hallway outside my office.
Careful! I paid $100 for this suit. You won't be needed in the pokey, bloke.
Jeremy.
But if you keep causing me trouble, I'm gonna shove this boot up your ass.
Jerry sprang to his feet and bolted through the door. Misbehaving was part of his bailiwick. Miss P shot me a grin. He has a nice way with people. Before I could even cogitate on a clever retort, a man staggered unceremoniously into our group as if he had been shoved from behind, which I suspected was the case. Jeremy loomed in the doorway behind him, with Jerry bringing up the rear. Surprise flashed across the Aussie's face as he realized he had an audience.
"Convenient that you're all here."
His eyes singled me out as he gestured toward the man he held.
"I brought you a present."
"My birthday is coming up. Thanks for remembering. But what should I do with him?" I leaned my head sideways, trying to catch the man's eyes, which remained fixed on his shoes. Short, balding, in a $100 suit that had brown stains splattered down the front, but with an expensive watch and shined shoes, he had a trying-too-hard air about him. Jimmy G pushed himself from the wall and stepped toward the man, who now stood in the middle of the room, encircled by all of us.
"Boogie? Is that you?"
The man raised his head. As he did so, and we got a good look at him, a collective gasp filled the room. The man had been savagely beaten. One eye was black and blue and swollen shut, the other only slightly less damaged. His lower lip, twice its original size and marred by an open red split, oozed blood, which he nervously licked.
"Jeremy?"
Miss P. asked, her shock evident.
"I found him this way." "Boogie, it is you."
Jimmy G. had stepped in front of the man, putting them nose to nose.
"Yeah, it's me,"
Boogie Fleischman growled in a voice that was far deeper and resonant than expected from such a small human. Jeremy prodded Boogie's shoulder.
"You want to tell them what you told me?"
Even though it was framed as such, it was not a question.
"Look, all I did was get to telling stories."
Jeremy shot him a look.
"Start at the beginning."
Boogie started again.
"Okay. Maybe I talk too much, okay? The kid got me talking about old times. Remembering, like."
"And?" Jeremy prompted. Boogie waffled for a minute as I held my breath. From the intent looks around the room, it seemed everyone else was hanging on his words as well.
"Okay, I got to bragging a bit."
"And?" Jeremy clearly had more patience than I did.
"We got to rigging explosives, like I used to do."
Boogie ground his toe into the hardwood flooring. "We?" I asked. "We who?"
"Me and the Campos kid." "You son of a bitch!"
Jimmy shouted as he launched himself at Boogie. The two men fell in a tangle of limbs with Jimmy on top. He reared back, as if in slow motion, then launched a haymaker at Boogie's head. Pulling his arms protectively in front of his face, Boogie shielded himself. With one fluid movement, Dane launched himself, straddled the tangled men, grabbed Jimmy by the shirt collar, and lifted him off Boogie. With a practiced motion, he set him on his feet, then held him there.
"Enough, big guy."
Jerry helped Boogie to his feet, then put himself between Boogie and Jimmy G.
"But he blew up my place,"
Jimmy spluttered. "Not personally, but in a manner of speaking, you're right," I said, finally finding my voice. "You wouldn't happen to have mentioned the location of your old stash of bomb parts to the young Mr. Campos, would you?" Boogie ground the toe of his shoe into the carpet.
"I said a lot of stuff."
I took that as a yes. "And the papers in the briefcase?"
"Letters Eugenia had given me. She wanted me to get rid of all of it."
"Why?" He looked up. When he answered my question, he didn't look at me. Instead, he stared at Mona.
"They proved Albert Campos wasn't the big boss's kid.
Something tight loosened inside me. Truth. Such a hindrance to blackmail. But Albert had to know that these days DNA could solve that issue pretty easily.
Crazy people do crazy things.
That bit of wisdom came from Boogie. He should know. It doesn't add up. Something's bothering me, but I can't put my finger on it. I looked at Mother. We may know the truth, but Albert Campos is still operating under his mother's lies.
You gotta believe me. I had no idea he would do any of this.
Boogie didn't even try to keep the beg out of his voice.
When Jimmy's place blew, I had a real bad feeling. I was on my way here to shut the kid down when that guy...
He tilted his head toward Jeremy.
Waylaid me.
Why were you coming here? To warn the big boss? Boogie looked at me like I'd lost my mind.
Albert? Of course not. I was coming to warn you.
I leaned back as if I'd been slapped. Me?
This is the second time a Campos has tried to kill you.
Boogie's eyes, okay, the open one, bored into me.
With you out of the way, he thinks he's Albert Rothstein's only heir.
Mona gasped.
Kill Lucky?
Then her hand flew to her belly. It wasn't hard to read her mind. Mother, relax. I don't think that's his game. He knows he's not the big boss's son, and he knows it would be easy to prove. No, he's after something else. I tried to see the whole puzzle. It was there, but I couldn't. High math isn't my strong suit, but, given Mother's age when she met my father, and my age when the first bomb blew, Albert Campos is only 5 years older than me. 6, max. I don't know too many 9- or 10-year-olds who have the bomb-making skill set. Do you?
It wasn't the kid who tried the first time.
Jimmy G glanced around the group.
It was his mother.
His eyes locked on Boogie.
Tell him, Boogs.
After a moment of vacillation, Boogie dove in.
Eugenia played all the angles.
Dane rose and offered Boogie his seat, which I thought was gallant of him. Boogie did look a bit worse for wear. He accepted Dane's offer with a nod, then a cringe. Once settled in the chair, he began again.
Her best play was getting guys over a barrel and then squeezing their balls until they screamed.
A real peach, I groused. The big boss would never fall for that.
His first and last time, Jimmy G added. He always did learn things the hard way. Guess we all did.
Boogie, finish your story, Mona prompted. He shifted uncomfortably in the chair.
As I was saying, Eugenia could get pretty much anybody to do pretty much anything.
As I looked at him, the light dawned. Just a glimmer, but it was there. I leaned toward him and lowered my voice. You taught her how to make that bomb, didn't you? Boogie's eyes wouldn't meet mine. A bead of sweat trickled down the side of his face. You taught her. Then you took the fall. Why? Finally he looked up. Licking his lips, he glanced around the room.
I loved her.
Even when she loved someone else?
Hey, love ain't some two-way street, you know.
Pretty profound for a two-bit hood, I spat. I don't know why.
Life has a way of grinding stuff into you.
Boogie pulled himself up, regaining a bit of bravado.
I loved her. And back then, I wasn't above letting her erase my competition. I'm not proud of it. Stupid and short-sighted, I know. Love does crazy things.
I couldn't keep the sarcasm out of my voice. This is like a B-movie. Mona reached over and patted my hand.
Honey, back then, Vegas was a B-movie.
Boogie may have tried to kill you, sorta secondarily-like, but he had noble motivation,
Jimmy added, as if love was an exoneration for attempted murder, which, between you and me, was an interesting premise. If it was, the gene pool would be whittled down significantly. And that makes everything fine, I countered. So no one knows what happened to Albert's mother? I caught a glance between Jimmy and Boogie.
What?
Tell me.
Eugenia had the baby while Boogie was in jail,
Jimmy explained, his voice strong with the story.
She hung around for a while, but 10 years was a long time to wait.
Boogie jumped in.
8. I got out early on account of good behavior. So she took a shot at killing Lucky or Mona, either one. I don't think it mattered.
Jimmy continued after silencing Boogie with a look.
Then she took the kid and disappeared. She'd taken a shot at Albert Rothstein. She wasn't no fool. She ran and she ran fast.
Did you try to find her? I asked Boogie.
I thought about it. But if she'd wanted me to find her, she would have told me where to look.
Heartbreak hung heavy in every word. God help me, but I felt sorry for him. And young Albert? How'd he come into your life?
About 10 years ago, he came knocking on my door.
Just like that?
Yeah. Weird, isn't it?
Boogie tried to grin, then thought better of it when the skin on his lips stretched the split already there.
I took him in. No questions.
I glared at Boogie. And you filled his head with stories and instructions. His smile fled.
Like I said, the kid got me talking.
I leaned back and closed my eyes, trying to think. Pretty hard to do when all I saw was red. The past, no matter how far you run, it'll always catch you and bite you on the ass. But if all this was true, it supported the facts Flash had ferreted out of Crayfish Crider. Opening my eyes, I surveyed the group. So Albert is from a short line of petty hoods and extortionists who want me out of the way so he can move higher on the food chain. How cliched.
Honey,
Mona said in that irritating, placating tone she sometimes adopted.
It's Vegas.
Would you people stop saying that? It is not Vegas, at least not the Vegas I know. I looked around the group for support. Finding a few nods, but little else, I forged ahead, building steam. Look, the bottom line is, we need to find Albert Campos before he blows up something, or someone else.
We know he's after you, Dane added quietly.
I knew he would only offer me as bait if no other alternative presented itself. So I didn't hold it against him. From where I was sitting, I thought we were out of options too. Boogie nodded as his eyes bored into mine.
He's right. If you want to find Campos, I'd be looking over my shoulder if I were you. Lucky, where are you supposed to be tonight?
Dane asked, his eyes intense, his voice hard. On the roof with the VIPs? Like a kill shot from a sniper rifle, the ordinary part of my real life hit me between the eyes.
Shit! What time is it?
Almost 9, Miss P answered with a worried edge to her voice. You better hurry.
Sending me into harm's way?
I kidded. You'll do it anyway. Arguing about it would waste time we don't have. She turned and grabbed Dane with one hand and Jeremy with the other. If anything happens to her...
Boogie,
Mona said, her voice soft.
Who did that to you?
I had it coming.
Boogie squirmed as he looked at her. She cocked an eyebrow at him. No doubt, but I need to know.
Your husband, ma'am.
The big boss did this to you? I don't think I kept the awe out of my voice.
He doesn't cotton to anyone coming after his own.
That was probably a gross understatement, but I didn't think I needed to point that out. Mona swallowed hard. Her internal struggle bloomed across her face when she looked at me. He'll kill him, Lucky. Over my dead body. Okay, perhaps that wasn't quite the quip I was reaching for, but I didn't have time to correct it. I squeezed Mother's shoulder as I moved to step by her. Don't worry, we'll both be fine, and I won't let him kill Albert Campos. If I could find him in time, I thought, but didn't think Mona needed to hear that part. I didn't make the same promise about myself. Jerry's security walkie-talkie jumped to life.
Sir, Mr. Rothstein is back on the property.
Jerry grabbed the device and pushed to talk.
Location? Service elevator 6. He's headed to the roof.
I glanced at my watch. Almost 9. The fireworks were just about to start. A symphony of voices, a melody pitched on an undercurrent of excitement, greeted me as I strode out of the elevator and into the crowd gathered, drinks in hand, in Babel, our rooftop club. The big boss was up here somewhere. His presence was a sure sign Albert Campos was also wandering among the crowd of innocents. But where? My gaze swept the crowd in front of me. The heat of the day had yet to fully yield to the refreshing temps of night in the high desert. Daylight, caught in death throes, fractured into vibrant oranges and pinks on the horizon, just above the dark outline of the spring mountains. With Dane and Jeremy sticking close, I moved to the bar and rounded up the staff as quickly as I could. Our head bartender, Sean, could tell it was serious with one look. His grin vanished, and he rallied the staff out of earshot of the partiers. God, had I really bemoaned all those bomb-scare drills we had suffered through? Never again. Surrounded by the staff, really just kids in too little clothing, I went into my spiel. I remember the bomb squad guys telling us that maintaining calm was the key. That, and maybe not throwing up. God, if a bomb went off! I slammed my brain closed on that visual and focused. Listen up, folks, I said, trying to keep my voice low, yet loud enough to be heard. This is not one of those drills. This is the real thing. You know what to do. Clear the area. Move everyone downstairs. Use the service elevators as well, just like we practiced. Got it? They filtered into the crowd. I grabbed Dane and Jeremy. You two make sure all the guests are out, then escort all the employees to the ground floor. I looked at first one, then the other. I'm counting on you. They both nodded. I could tell they wanted to argue, but they didn't. Romeo, with the SWAT team, was guarding all exits. I could hear him giving orders through the earpiece I had stuck in my left ear. He'd thought it wise that I could keep track of his whereabouts, which was out of character. Wise to his games, I wasn't fooled. He wanted me listening so he could give me orders. But I could talk back. Not only could I hear, but I could communicate through a tiny mic on a stalk extending from the earpiece around toward my mouth. Romeo, you there?
Right here.
Dane and Jeremy will be coming down with the employees after all the guests are out. I want you to keep the two of them there. Neither you nor I want a couple of lone rangers riding into this showdown.
You got it.
I could hear him give instructions to his officers. The bomb squad was waiting in the wings for, well, for a bomb, although I caught sight of a few teams of 2 agents, each team with a dog. The sooner we found that dynamite, the better for my blood pressure. I'm sure I wasn't alone in that. And I needed to find the big boss. Campos had lured him up here, of that I was sure. Campos also knew I'd be up here manning the fireworks display. Guess the guy had picked his OK Corral. A showdown, which had its upside. If I was right, then I had time to clear the roof. As Jimmy G had said, this was personal. Jerry would be leading several details of security personnel up through the staff elevators onto the roof outside the confines of the club. Although I couldn't see them, I knew they would be there, searching just like me as I made my way toward the dais near the command module for the fireworks. I strained to catch a glimpse of the big boss through the crowd as it oozed toward the exits. Xavier materialized out of the crowd that was moving reluctantly toward the elevators.
Lucky, girl! Where the hell you been?
Surprise brought me up short. I hadn't seen him. Apparently my eyes were tracking higher. As if you didn't know.
What are you talking about?
Okay, maybe he didn't know. I grabbed his shoulder, wheeled him around, and propelled him back toward the control console for the fireworks as I filled him in on the missing dynamite.
One stick of dynamite? Not enough to even dampen enthusiasm around here,
said the man used to playing with things that went boom. But enough to get someone's attention. We stopped at the console. Xavier, tell your men to leave. You should get out of here, too. It's not safe. Xavier nodded at his men who had overheard. They silently filed past, heading toward the service elevator. We both crawled around the dais looking for any evidence of a bomb. We didn't find one.
Damn.
With the all clear, Xavier stepped up onto the dais, manning the console. With the sun now below the horizon, natural light faded fast. We'd killed the breaker to the lights up here, so no one could accidentally trip the switch and ruin the show. In retrospect, that probably wasn't a great idea. My eyes were adjusting, but it was hard to penetrate to the growing darkness. Even the dim glow from the fish tank under the Lucite dance floor had been killed. With one hand shielding my eyes, I peered into the gloom.
I can't see a thing.
Strains of music, the score to our fireworks show, filtered through the speakers.
I can give you light,
Xavier said, raising his voice to be heard as the music swelled, building toward the first salvo.
Intermittent, and only 30 minutes of it.
We'd established that the big boss wasn't in the club, but Service Elevator 6 came up to this wing of the rooftop. He had to be somewhere shrouded under the cover of night. I scanned the far reaches of the roof, trying to penetrate the darkness.
Go for it.
Xavier turned his attention to the console in front of him as I stepped to the railing separating the club from the rest of the roof, climbed over, and eased into the darkness. The first shell exploded out of its mortar with a huge boom, jolting me to my core. Then, a few seconds later, it burst overhead in a shower of light. Instinctively, my eyes shut in defense against the assault. I forced them open, scanning the rooftop in the dissipating light from above, my eyes tearing. Nothing. No movement. The glow faded as I moved carefully further out onto the rooftop. Vaguely, I became aware of the music and the muted noise of the crowd lining the strip far below. Stilling my body, I prepared for the next launch. This time, the sound didn't make me jump. Much. Desperate to make each second count, I forced my eyes open, waiting for the light. The second boom high above thrummed through me. Then a tear-inducing brightness. Through narrowed eyes, I tried to calmly scan the rooftop, focusing a few seconds on one 10-degree quadrant at a time out of the 180 degrees in front of me. This time, I thought I saw movement. I stilled and tunneled my vision. Yes, two figures, one tall and lean, one short, hunched over, as if in pain, moving away from me. The embers burned out, and darkness once again engulfed the rooftop. I waited, my heart pounding. Then I whispered into my mic,
Romeo, I got them.
Breathless, I explained, using as few words as possible.
Campos has the big boss. I think he has a gun. I'll send some guys up in the service elevator.
Tell them subtle Romeo.
Okay. Lucky, it's my job.
Romeo, it's my father. Another launch out of the tube behind me caught me off guard, and I flinched. The music grew louder. Nothing like a techno-pop soundtrack as my life played out in flashes of light and spikes of adrenaline. Had I been picking the music, I would have thought of a better song than Thanks for the Memories, redone by someone who sounded a bit like Nicki Minaj and who had the same potty mouth. Prepared, I moved quickly to the burst of light, this time a kaleidoscope of colors. Adrenaline appeared to be the antidote to bump and bruises. My body didn't give me any lip as I stepped lightly over various pipes and around small electrical junction boxes closing the gap. The light once again faded. I paused, gathering myself, then launched again into the next explosion of light. Through a few more cycles, like a stop-and-start dance, I weaved my way, drawing closer. Crouching behind some electrical thing, I eased my head around in the fading glow. Albert, indeed, had my father. The other Albert. The young man pressed my father down, forcing him to sit on one of the many boxes similar to, but smaller than, the one I hid behind. I guessed the young man had summoned the big boss, then jumped him. Whispering, I gave the location to Romeo. Although he didn't respond, Jerry would be listening in as well. Mentally following the chatter in my ear, I tried to visualize where Romeo wanted everyone.
Lucky, I know you're out there,
Campos called out. A body hurtled in next to me, crouching to remain hidden. A hand grabbed my arm. Then a woman's disembodied voice whispered,
"Don't say anything. Not yet."
My heart leaped into my throat, strangling any reply I might have had.
"Who the hell are you?"
I managed after my heart dropped back down to beat a rhythm in my chest.
"Sophia Denton."
She sat on the ground, her back to the box, as she whispered a few things into her own mic. When she finished, she turned her attention to me.
"Romeo sent me. I'm a hostage negotiator with Metro."
"I don't negotiate." I adopted a similar position, my shoulder pressed to hers. The box was pretty small to cover both of us.
"Give the bad guy anything he wants, then give him a bullet."
Darkness hid Sophia, but not the smile in her voice. My heart still galloped. The breeze cooled the sweat that had popped out everywhere, sending a shiver through me.
"Pretty much." "That's why Romeo sent me. You want your father back in one piece, don't you?"
"Right now, I'm on the fence on that one." I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. When I opened them again, a bit of calm returned.
"Really?"
Sophia sounded like she was starting to think I might be part of the problem and not a part of the solution. To be honest, I wasn't sure about myself either.
"As far as I'm concerned, you guys can perforate the bad guy all you want, as long as you avoid doing that to my father. I reserve that privilege." "Using force is the last resort, at least on our side of the equation."
Sophia chuckled.
"We'll do our best. Do you have a gun?"
"No."
"Good," Romeo said to ask.
The kid knew me too well.
"You wouldn't have one I could use, then?" Sophia snorted. "Not on your life. They'd have my badge."
I wanted to argue, but thought better of it.
"All righty, then."
Sophia's voice held a hint of respect, along with a dose of caution.
"It's showtime."
A shell hadn't exploded over our heads for a bit.
"Wonder what's up with the fireworks?"
I peeked my head around, but couldn't tell whether Campos and the big boss were still there or not.
"I asked him to give us 3 minutes to get everyone in place. They should start again any second now."
As if Xavier was privy to our conversation, a mortar whooshed to life behind us, launching another ball of fire.
Lucky! Answer me!
Albert's voice had a cold calculation to it, not ruffled at all. Sophia chuckled softly.
Cool customer. Good.
Good?
At least he's not hanging on the ragged edge. Those guys, they're pretty unpredictable. I bet this guy wants to talk, tell us his story. And that's the goal. Keep him talking, focused on you. Shouldn't be too hard. He hates you already.
Great. I wasn't sure how I felt about that. I glanced around the electrical box at my back. Campos and the big boss were still there, half hidden in the lee of a larger box. A condenser for the air conditioning system.
Honey, we're known not only by the friends we keep, but by the enemies we make.
Sophia squeezed my hand.
We got a sniper on the roof over there.
She pointed to the east.
The goal is to take him peaceably. If we can't...
I'm really not in a peaceable mood, I groused. And for once, I was telling the God's honest truth, completely unvarnished by even a thin coat of smartass.
Try it my way first. Keep him talking. Be non-confrontational. Draw him out. Romeo filled me in, but we still don't know exactly what he wants. Besides killing you, I mean.
Like a shot, the firework exploded high above. My heart skipped a beat. Someone ostensibly wanting to kill me was still a bit new, and I hadn't totally adjusted.
I'm here, Campos!
I shouted into the cascading light, waiting for it to reach the rooftop.
I understand it's me you really want. You don't understand nothing.
Draw him out,
Sophia whispered. Then she turned to speak in hushed tones into her mic.
Let him tell his story.
You're right about that. Why don't you tell me what I don't know then? Lucky girl,
my father said, his voice strained as if filtered through a mask of pain.
Get the hell out of here. It's gonna... Shut up, old man,
Campos growled. Peeking around, I saw the kid raise his arm, then bring it down in a vicious swipe. A grunt. Then silence. Instinctively, my muscles bunched. Sophia's hand on my arm stopped me from charging.
No. Fuck.
I leaned back and tried to focus.
Campos, I know you're angry. Can you tell me why? Our old man killed my mother.
Darkness once again oozed into the corners, closing out the light and wrapping its tentacles around my heart. The big boss? A killer? Was it possible? I forced the thoughts away. I so didn't want to go there. And his last words had sounded like a shout of warning. But of what?
Did you hear me, Lucky?
Albert Campos's voice sounded as taut as a piano wire. Sophia nudged me with an elbow.
You can do this.
The urgency in her whisper drew my focus like a sharp stick in the side.
Why do you think the big boss killed your mother? The guys told me she was shaking him down. Then she disappeared. Later, when I was old enough, I put two and two together.
The light dawned. I started breathing again. Funny, I hadn't been aware that I'd been holding my breath.
What pieces? I was 8 when my mother disappeared. I can tell you the foster system isn't a good place to grow up.
Where was she when she disappeared? I kept asking the logical questions, even though the conclusions to be drawn scared the hell out of me.
She'd come back here, to Vegas. I remember her telling me she had a score to settle. And that was it.
You never heard from her again?
No.
And her body? I braced for the answer I knew was coming.
Never found,
Albert's voice turned hard, but with a hint of pain.
She just disappeared!
Did somebody go to the police?
That got a laugh out of him.
Half the force was on the take. One old guy did finally tell me that word had filtered down from some big shot, and they had closed the file and buried it.
I didn't want to know what Albert had done to the old guy to get him to spill. If I was a betting gal, I'd put my money on the old guy now, being just another nameless body buried in the desert.
And you assumed it was our father?
He seemed the best candidate.
Sophia leaned in as another mortar exploded behind us.
Don't argue with him. Go along.
I shot her a look, even though I knew she couldn't see it, then raised my voice so Campos could hear.
I can see where you're coming from. It sure looks bad.
Bad?
Campos's voice rose.
I should shoot him right now.
I whirled and peeked around the corner. The kid grabbed my father by the collar, pulling him around. He still slumped like a rag doll, but I thought I saw hints that he was coming around. Tough old bird.
If you kill him, then you'll never know for sure, will you?
The kid paused.
Can you tell me why you planted the bomb?
Good,
Sophia whispered. Campos laughed.
I knew it would stir things up. And if I killed you, so much the better. I wanted your father to know what it felt like to lose someone important.
Okay, I get that. I understand why you did that. And nobody was hurt. That's a good thing.
I paused, thinking.
Negotiate,
Sophia urged.
Albert, we're sort of in a difficult spot here. You want your story out. You want to get to the bottom of who killed your mother. Boy, I understand that. And I promise we'll turn over every stone to find the truth. But I need something from you.
Perfect.
The edge in Sophia's voice dulled just a touch.
If we're going to get the truth, we need our father.
The words stuck in my throat, but I choked them out.
I need you to put the gun down. Kick it to the side, then take your jacket off so I can see you're not hiding anything. When the next dose of light hits us, put your hands behind your head, step away from the big boss, and then drop to your knees.
Another mortar exploded behind us. Interminable seconds of silence followed.
It's the only way you'll know, Albert. The only way your mother can rest.
The shell exploded overhead.
How do I know I can trust you?
I leaned back, trying to think of something to say.
Tell him. You don't!
I said, taking a flyer. It's the truth he wanted. I hoped he could recognize it when he heard it. He laughed.
You are a ballsy broad.
All things considered, I wished folks would stop telling me that, although I thought I detected just a hint of respect, but I might have imagined that part.
Okay. Your word, Lucky.
That's what he wanted all along. To put me where he was. To cause me the pain of losing someone so important. But even more, he wanted me to be responsible for my own loss. I knew what I had to do. As the reality washed over me, I think my spirit died just a little.
Albert, you have my word.
Then I lowered my voice and whispered into my mic.
Romeo, keep your guys hidden. Let me do this.
Sophia stiffened beside me.
Lucky.
Romeo's voice held the hardness of an order.
This is my show, Detective. He doesn't know you're here. No need to alarm him. Besides, it's me he wants.
Rising, I stepped into the light to face one of my worst fears. Chapter 6. I took 2 steps and stopped. I tried not to look at my father slumped at Albert's feet. My eyes met his and held. I promise you, I'll get to the bottom of this. For a moment, I wasn't sure what he would do. Then, keeping the gun trained on me, he worked one arm out of his jacket, then switched hands and shrugged out of the other sleeve. Making a show out of it, he dropped the cloth, then moved it in my direction with one foot. I couldn't read his expression, couldn't tell how he was feeling, but with a gun pointed at my chest and nothing to protect myself with, I sure knew how I was feeling. The dot of a sniper sight targeted his chest, blood red on the white of his shirt, making me feel a bit better. Romeo's whispered order sounded in my ear.
If he so much as twitches, shoot him.
My heart pounded as I tried to appear calm. My muscles tightened, coiling. Don't you need to know, Albert? I know I do. Finally, his shoulders sagged as the fight leaked out of him. Lowering himself, he set his gun on the ground and kicked it to the side, away from the big boss. Then he moved forward and dropped to his knees, his hands behind his head. The police swarmed, pressing him down, then securing his wrists in handcuffs. He didn't fight. I rushed to the big boss, falling to my knees next to him. Father? He groaned, a good sign. The trickle of blood oozed down his forehead. Circling his shoulders, I drew him to me. Don't move. A figure dropped down next to me, opening a familiar black box. I looked up into the dark. Serious eyes of Nick the paramedic.
I'll take it from here.
He gave me a reassuring smile as he fell to work. Rocking back on my heels, I pushed myself to my feet, giving him some room. The big boss's hand snaked out and grabbed my ankle, stopping me. He struggled to say something. I dropped to a squat, balancing on the balls of my feet as I strained to hear. Don't talk. Rest. A perimeter of lights sprang to life, making me blink against the brightness. My father gripped me tighter, his fingers digging into the soft flesh of my lower leg.
Don't,
he wheezed. I bent toward him. What?
Don't.
He struggled to pull breath into his lungs.
Briefcase.
Briefcase? I asked, a cold dread surging through me. What briefcase?
Would this be it?
I turned in time to see a young Metro officer pick up a worn leather case by the handle. My father wheezed.
10 seconds.
Motion timer. I glanced at Campos as the police led him away. He threw me a look, and I knew. Pushing myself to my feet, my legs were already in motion. I reached the cop in 2 strides. In 1 motion, and never slowing my pace, I grabbed the briefcase. The edge of the building wasn't far. I counted in my head. 3, 1,000. 4, 1,000. Planting my forward foot, I reared back, my arm arcing behind me, coiling, with the briefcase held firmly by the handle. I forced myself to pause. Timing would be everything. 5, 1,000, 6, 1,000, 7. With all my weight behind it, I hurled the briefcase as high and as far as I could.
Everybody down!
I shouted as I watched the case arc into the night. Then I fell on my stomach, covering my head with my arms. 8, 1,000, 9. The air shattered as the dynamite ignited. After the concussion passed, I raised my head and looked over my shoulder. The others were moving. From below, I heard the roar of the crowd, a cheer for the grand finale. I rolled over on my back and stared at the stars. As Romeo peered down at me, I started to laugh. Like birds pecking after the food was gone, seemingly half of Metro scurried around the rooftop. With the excitement over, there wasn't much left to do but fill in the gaps. The big boss sat on a chaise by the pool, his normal vitality clearly at an ebb. He chewed his lip, squinting one eye against the pain as Nick taped his ribs. In the half-light of the perimeter floods, the bruise blooming across the right side of his face was highlighted by the gash left by the gun Albert had clocked him with. Apparently, the gash wasn't that bad. He only needed one steri-strip, where mine had needed several. Either that, or Nick was running low on the things. There'd been a run on them lately. Easing myself down next to my father, I grabbed his hand, then leaned my head on his shoulder. He sighed, briefly touching his head to mine.
I can always count on you.
There wasn't even a hint of disbelief in his voice, just a quiet assurance that that's how it would be between us. I liked that. After all these years and the things you've done for me, I figured I sort of owed you. Drawing strength from each other, we shared the comfort of closeness for a moment. When he spoke haltingly, as if searching for the words or stumbling over the emotion.
The past. You can never outrun it.
Our past is part of who we are. That sounded profound, especially for me. When had I stepped into the deep end? I felt my father stiffen.
You need to let the Campos matter go.
His voice held a plea of conviction. Tell me about Eugenia Campos, I said, sidestepping.
I'm sure your mother brought you up to speed.
Yes, as far as she knew. But I have a feeling there's more to the story, like what happened when, after 8 years, she drops into your lap again. My father sighed, buying for time. Finally, he said,
She claimed the kid was mine. She wanted money, wanted him to share in my empire, as she called it.
He chuckled.
It was far from that at the time, I can assure you.
If you don't have two nickels to rub together... I stopped, suddenly defeated. I didn't want to know any of this. With knowledge came responsibility, and I wasn't ready to shoulder that burden.
Of course I wanted proof,
my father continued.
Even though DNA was pretty rudimentary, she agreed. I told her if the kid was mine, of course I would claim him.
Now that sounded like the big boss I knew and loved. Was sentiment affecting my discernment? Of course it was, but I am who I am. And then?
Nothing.
What do you mean, nothing?
She didn't show for the test.
I felt the stirrings of hope and the hint of disbelief. She vanished? My father's eyes met mine and held steady.
Yeah.
So on the eve of getting what she wanted, assuming you were the father, she split?
I'm not saying that. To be honest, I don't know what happened. I've got my suspicions, but I wasn't going to push it. My problem had been solved. Besides, I was hip deep in building the Lucky Aces. I had more than I could handle already.
I see. And the police? His eyes flicked away from mine.
What about them?
Did you ask them to bury the file?
I might have.
His hand reached out and covered mine. It felt cold. I promised Campos I'd look into his mother's death.
He fooled you into it.
Knowing they would be a dagger to his heart, I weighed my next words. I need to know. He took a sharp breath, as if absorbing a blow. I'd been right. The thought made me sad.
She's dead, Lucky.
How do you know?
I just know.
On complete overload, I needed time to myself. I'd left the big boss under the watchful eye of Mona, who had been hovering around like a mother bird, protecting a fledgling that had fallen from the nest. Separating from the crowd, no one noticed me leaving, or if they did, they were kind enough to understand. I rode the elevator down to the lobby as thoughts whizzed through my brain at hyperspeed, impossible to grab and hold. A wall of sound hit me as the doors opened at the bottom, shattering the cloud of discomforting musings like a bazooka shell exploding a barn. People filled every corner, excited chatter poking holes in my bad mood. The magic of Vegas. Folks from every corner of the universe, gathering to have some fun, shrug off the burden of daily worries and responsibilities, recharging so they could handle the vicissitudes of life. As I pushed into the crowd, I breathed deeply, absorbing. A glimmer of hope bloomed deep inside. Was the big boss right? Did Albert Campos's manipulation excuse me from my promise to find the truth? What is it the lawyers called it? Fraud in the inducement? Lawyers, I shook my head. So clever, taking simple concepts and obscuring them with obtuse language. Now we all believed we couldn't survive without an attorney on retainer, thereby ensuring their survival. Survival, interesting word. Unsure where I really wanted to go, I wandered through the crowd. Survival. The word hit my heart. The lengths we all go to ensure our own survival. What would I do? What had the big boss done? Was it my place to judge? Was it wise to dig up old skeletons? And who was I really worried about? The big boss or myself? I'd just found my father. Was I ready to have him taken from me once again? Then again, did I want a murderer for a father? Lost, I wandered through the casino, only half aware of the games underway, the music filtering through, the siren call of the slots, the shouts of joy, the groans of disappointment. Glasses clinked, wheels spun. I felt safe, cocooned in the familiar. Leaving the noise behind, I ambled into the relative quiet of the bazaar, spurred on by a primal need. Human contact. The comfort of a hug. As if hearing my silent plea, Jean-Charles met me halfway. Before I could say anything, he wrapped his arms around me, pulling me tight to him. My arms pinned by my side, I let him hold me. Nuzzling into his neck, I breathed him in.
"You are okay," he whispered against my hair.
It wasn't a question. Instead, it sounded more like an answer to a prayer. My heart swelled as I nodded against his shoulder.
"I am hearing these things about something bad on the roof. About you and your father."
Still holding me, he leaned back to look at me.
"A bomb?"
"It's over now." I didn't want to explain. I couldn't find the words. I avoided the emotion. Somehow he understood.
"Yes, it is over. And the angels brought you back to me."
He dropped one arm, keeping the other one around my shoulders, so we both faced in the direction I'd been heading. He urged me forward.
"Come. I will feed you if you like. Or I have wine, or perhaps something stronger. A good cognac to settle the nerves."
He chuckled, a deep rumble that hit my core with warmth.
"Your nerves, and mine."
A line snaked from the entrance to the Burger Palais, which we bypassed, making me feel guilty. Every table was full, but amazingly, a couple sitting at the bar had just paid their check, and they relinquished their stools to us. Jean-Charles made sure I was comfortable. Normally, I didn't like anyone fussing over me. But tonight it made me feel good, chasing away the demons of the unknown. Stepping behind the bar, he put his hands on the counter and leaned toward me with a smile.
"What'll it be?"
I looked at all the bottles on the shelves behind him. Everything from sipping vodka, Tito's was my favorite, to Napoleon brandy, to the stuff in the Baccarat bottle that cost a king's ransom for a couple of sips. I didn't have the palate nor the ego to go there. After a moment of thought, I met his clear blue eyes that held undisguised emotion. Was this what love looked like? You know, I'd really just like a super thick vanilla shake. He shot me a grin, then reached over and squeezed my hand as if he could see into my heart and understood. Then he stepped out from behind the bar and disappeared toward the kitchen. Staring at my reflection in the glass behind the bottles, I realized I didn't look half as bad as I felt. The shiner made a bit of a statement, but the rest of me looked somewhat normal, which didn't feel at all normal. My life was still on tilt, but from the looks of me, it was hard to tell. I guess that was a good thing. The conversation of the couple next to me captured my attention.
"That song, my God, it's wonderful," the lady said, as she bent to sip a pink drink through a straw.
I listened to the tune playing in the background, and my heart fell.
"Lucky for Me, I think it's called," the lady continued. "I saw the guy on Good Morning America this morning. He wrote it for a lady who works here."
She turned to her male companion, who looked bored.
"I wonder who she is. She could be sitting right here and I wouldn't know it."
The lady glanced around, catching me staring.
"It could be you," she said.
I gave her a weak grin.
"What are the odds?"
She reached out and tapped me conspiratorially on the arm.
"Wouldn't it be grand? I mean, to have someone love you like that."
Then she sighed as she pressed her hand to her heart. I answered with my usual erudition. When she turned her attention back to her partner, letting me off the hook, I almost sighed out loud. Listening to the strains of music, to Teddy's soulful voice, I had to admit that this song was wonderful, perfect even, except for the whole broken heart thing. I pulled my iPhone out of my pocket, a new acquisition. I wasn't used to the whole app thing yet, but I did know how to work iTunes. I searched the store, found the song, and downloaded it. There it was, Lucky for Me, in my library. Then the phone asked me if I wanted to make it my ringtone. Without thought, I hit yes. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Lucky Bang by Deborah Kuntz. Copyright 2012 by Deborah Kuntz. Performed by Renee Rodman. Performance copyright 2013 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.